Blog Talk Radio.
This is how it's gonna be. Therefore, you got to to let me and my people go. 'Cause I wanna be free, completely free. Lord, won't you please come and save me? I wanna be free, totally free. I'm not gonna let it work.
Assistant to Rumsfeld. I can't call his name. Who?
Pearl.
No, not Pearl. Wolfowitz.
Oh, Wolfowitz, yeah.
Wolfowitz.
Hold your point, Minister. We got to go to a top of the hour break. That's the kind of information that I wanted you to give us.
Carolina High School were injured today when a chemistry experiment sparked an explosion.
That's good.
Hazmat crews are still on the scene. A nurse who worked for Michael Jackson took
There's so many people who don't know that.
Conrad Murray today.
And they don't know it because the media is bought and paid for. This is a hell of a betrayal of the American people when you will not tell them the truth because you're afraid that if you tell the truth, your bosses will take your job from you. That's a hell of a thing. You don't have a democracy when you don't have a free press. You're all slaves, and you love it. So you deserve what you get, the erosion of your democracy. You'll soon be the laughing stock of the world.
That works out to less than 50 cents
a
month.
It's a damn shame. That's why the children are occupying space in New York, in Boston, in Washington, in Chicago, in San Francisco, in other cities. Why? Because they're not looking to you as a source of information for them. Look how long it took you all to talk about what was going on in New York. It took you 2 weeks because the same people that controlled the banks controlled the media. You all know it, but you're afraid to say it. But God put it on Farrakhan to say it for you. And maybe one day you'll get some courage to stand up and give America free media, a real free fourth estate. But right now, you ain't even worth the time of day.
Local news headlines, traffic and weather up next on WBOA.
I'm glad. Hell, I'm not hiding nothing. You need somebody to tell the truth.
That's right.
You need somebody that's not afraid to die for the truth that you could be made free. Because you're not free. And you don't really know what it means to really be a free white person, a free black person, a free Mexican, a free Arab. If you're afraid to tell the truth, what future does your children have in a society where truth is brushed to the curb? I thank God for the young man that invented this wonderful technology.
Steve Jobs.
That's the man that's freeing the whole planet. Where Zbigniew Brzezinski could say, yesterday it was easier to control 1 million people than to kill 1 million people. Then now he says it's easier to kill 1 million people than to control 1 million people because the genie is out of the box, the cat is out of the bag, the people all over the world are waking up. And you need to wake up and free America. Then you'll have a future and your children will have a future. But if you're afraid, afraid for what? You're going to die anyway.
Right.
Where can you run to escape death? If you love America, then fight for America.
It was a divine plan. America didn't happen by chance. All this was part of the divine plan that this would come about. The Moors then had a plan for a new world order. A one world, new world order. That was a Moorish plan originally. The Europeans inherited that plan through the Masonic Lodge, which was the vehicle by which we civilized and taught the Europeans. And so now when we hear them saying it, We ready to start the baby with the bathwater, thinking it's from them. No, we originally laid out that plan for one divine world order, and they merely inherited it. And when we fell off, they still espoused it, even though many of them are not carrying out right exactly, because you got to understand that the European Masons who run this government, who run the international scene, that they're under certain oaths and obligations. There's certain things that they can't do. There's certain things that they can't speak on. They're functioning more or less in a custodial capacity or fiduciary capacity. They were made custodians. When we were falling from power, we said, all right, you see this throne? We're going to make you custodians of this throne. You're going to become the keepers of the light, not the bearers of the light. We were the bearers of the light. We were the one who was able to actually go out there and re-educate the whole human family of planet Earth. We made them keepers, which means that it's but so much they can speak on. You look at their degree structure. Water freezes at what? 32 degrees, right? Well, the highest they go is 32 degrees, which means what? Their wisdom, their water, their wisdom is locked up. It's froze shut. They can't get out here teaching like we can. It's froze shut. And maybe once in a while, one of them may be honored with the honorary 33rd degree, and then they throw it out a little more. Maybe they can say a few things, but not too much. You see what I'm saying? And so we put those Europeans in power when we fell from power, because at that time the Catholic Church, through the Franciscan and Dominican orders, was destroying everything that the Moors had built up. All the civilization, all the high science that we had developed and cultivated and built up, they was destroying on a global level. And so we put the Europeans in power, nations in power. We refer to them as the Mystic Turks, or chief protectors of the sacred shrine. The shrine of what? The shrine of more science, of more civilization that we had cultivated for so long. We put them there in charge of it. And so they're custodians. And it sometimes happens that custodians forget their place and they start to think that they're the ones. But we got to remind them, y'all not the ones. Y'all the custodians. Y'all was to hold it and preserve it until we wake back up and then get this thing back on its original divine plan. So we are to convey to America that we're not about overthrowing this. No. As a matter of fact, we're about getting this thing back functioning on its original divine purpose. Because if we don't, it's going to be destroyed. As you see what's happening right now on a global level, America's going down a path now of self-destruction. And if we don't wake up and first save ourselves and then in turn save America, it's going to be all over with.
Their mouths are full of bitterness and curses, and in their paths nothing but ruin and misery, and the fear of God is not before their eyes. Have taken the hearts and minds of our leaders. They have recruited the rich and the powerful, and they have blinded us to the truth. Our human spirit is corrupted. Why do we worship greed? Because outside the limit of our sight, feeding off us, perched on top of us from birth to death, are our owners. Our owners, they have us, they control us, they are our masters. Wake up! They're all about you, all around you.
Our impulses are being redirected. We are living in an artificially induced state of consciousness that resembles sleep. The poor and the underclass are growing. Racial justice and human rights are non-existent. They have created a repressive society, and we are their unwitting accomplices. They are dismantling the sleeping middle class. More and more people are becoming poor. Their intention to rule rests with the annihilation of consciousness. We have been lulled into a trance. They have made us indifferent to ourselves, to others. We are focused only on our own gain. Please understand, they are safe as long as they are not discovered. That is their primary method of survival. Keep us asleep, keep us selfish, keep us sedated. We are their cattle. We are being bred for slavery. The revolution great air signal. Our transmitter is not powerful enough. The signal must be shut off at the source. We have...
I'd like to share a revelation that I've had during my time here. It came to me when I tried to classify your species. I realized that you're not actually mammals. Every mammal on this planet instinctively develops a natural equilibrium with the surrounding environment, but you humans do not. You move to an area and you multiply and multiply until every natural resource is consumed. And the only way you can survive is to spread to another area. There is another organism on this planet that follows the same pattern. Do you know what it is? A virus. Human beings are a disease, a cancer of this planet. You are a plague, and we are the cure.
So you see, it's very interesting that you should bring all of this up, because where do the blacks fit in? I know that you use them. They've been part of the Jewish Communist Party in the United States, a vast majority. What's going to be their end when this is all over?
Well, the Schwatzes, if the truth be known, came here with our father Lucifer 75,000 years ago when he lost that battle, only temporarily, though, in the heavens, because we're on a comeback. We're the comeback kids if there ever was one. But all the Schwatzes, what can you say? You know, they got a good time step. They dance good. A couple of them can sing. They make some nice barbecue. And they're real good for selling drugs, too, because they all love the drugs. And we make a lot of money off of selling the drugs. You do know that we control all the drug world and have since Rothschild got the opium wars in China going. We've been controlling the drugs ever since that. We let a few in here and there to make some money. And they get arrested and they go off to jail for that. But we make the big money. We're
the food industry and the pharmaceutical industry own the food industry. So the food industry wants to make you sick and ill by putting all these chemicals in that rot your body and make you ill. So they then can give you tablets to make you better, which don't, because it's all about Illuminati industries making money.
All about what?
Illuminati families making money in the world.
Well, yeah.
You perked up there, Rob. Illuminati families making money.
Doesn't make a lot of sense to me, to be honest.
But we gave our power away. We started not growing our own vegetables, started to give our power away to other people saying, we'll make this food for you. You don't want to cook your own food? We'll make this for you. And then we didn't start questioning what's in this stuff. And they started putting all kinds of crap in it. I'm a raw foodist myself.
Language for a Sunday morning.
But I don't eat meat because that's pumped full of chemicals and fear. And why would you want to eat cortisol and fear and put all that in your body? And it will rot your body, make you ill.
How do you respond to charges that your work amounts to an Uncle Tom approach?
I respond to the Uncle Tom charge, which is one I love, because now you're right in my briar patch. After the 60s, Black America turned around and began we put our fate in the hands of white America. We became dependent on white America. We said we have to have this, and we have to have that, and we have to have affirmative action. We have to have this kind of a program, and so forth and so on. All these demands that we made, and which then, of course, come out of a psychology of dependence, where I can't get ahead unless white America gives me all these things, and white America bends over backwards and uses affirmative action to get me in here and get me in there and so forth. I can't do it on my own. I can't be self-sufficient. I can't take care of myself. So militants, black militants, are all dependent, obsessed. They're people who are obsessed with dependence, and the mask that they wear, black anger, and they wear the fist. Who's the fist pointed at? The fist is pointed at whites. The fist is that I demand something from white people. That to me is the very essence of Uncle Tomism. The fist is the Uncle Tom. All it is a militant begging. It's militant dependence. I'm the one who's saying we can do it on our own and must do it on our own, and we won't ever get anywhere until we do it on our own. I'm the ones who's saying we have the ability to do it on our own. We have the capacity to do it on our own. And that dependence is a loser's game, and anger is a waste of time. We're free. We're free as we're ever going to be. And that now is our opportunity. We have to stand up like men and women and take it, regardless of what the world says, regardless of whether or not there's still racism here. I'm the militant. They're the Uncle Toms.
I'm sorry, but I don't want to be an emperor. That's not my business. I don't want to rule or conquer anyone. I should like to help everyone if possible. Jew, Gentile, black man, white. We all want to help one another. Human beings are like that. We want to live by each other's happiness, not by each other's misery. We don't want to hate and despise one another. In this world, there's room for everyone, and the good earth is rich and can provide for everyone. The way of life can be free and beautiful, but we have lost the way. Greed has poisoned men's souls, has barricaded the world with hate, has goose-stepped us into misery and bloodshed. We have developed speed, but we have shut ourselves in. Machinery that gives abundance has left us in want. Our knowledge has made us cynical, our cleverness hard and unkind. We think too much and feel too little. More than machinery, we need humanity. More than cleverness, we need kindness and gentleness. Without these qualities, life will be violent, and all will be lost. The aeroplane and the radio have brought us closer together. The very nature of these inventions cries out for the goodness in men, cries out for universal brotherhood, for the unity of us all. Even now, my voice is reaching millions throughout the world, millions of despairing men, women, and little children, victims of a system that makes men torture and imprison innocent people. To those who can hear me, I say, do not despair. The misery that is now upon us is but the passing of greed, the bitterness of men who fear the way of human progress. The hate of men will pass and dictators die, and the power they took from the people will return to the people. And so long as men die, liberty will never perish. Soldiers, don't give yourselves to brutes. Men who despise you, enslave you, who regiment your lives, tell you what to do, what to think, and what to feel, who drill you, diet you, treat you like cattle, use you as cannon fodder, don't give yourselves to these unnatural men, machine men with machine minds and machine hearts. You are not machines. You are not cattle. You are men. You have the love of humanity in your hearts. You don't hate. Only the unloved hate.
the unloved and the unnatural. Soldiers, don't fight for slavery, fight for liberty. In the 17th chapter of St. Luke it is written, the kingdom of God is within man, not one man nor a group of men, but in all men, in you. You, the people, have the power to create machines, the power to create happiness. You, the people, have the power to make this life free and beautiful, to make this life a wonderful adventure. Then in the name of democracy, let us use that power. Let us all unite. Let us fight for a new world, a decent world, that will give men a chance to work, that will give youth a future and old age a security. By the promise of these things, brutes have risen to power. But they lie. They do not fulfill that promise. They never will. Dictators free themselves, but they enslave the people. Now let us fight to fulfill that promise. Let us fight to free the world, to do away with national barriers, to do away with greed, with hate and intolerance. Let us fight for a world of reason. A world where science and progress will lead to all men's happiness. Soldiers, in the name of democracy, let us all unite!
I know you're out there. I can feel you now. I know that you're afraid. You're afraid of us. You're afraid of change. I don't know the future. I didn't come here to tell you how this is going to end. I came here to tell you how it's going to begin. I'm going to hang up this phone, and then I'm going to show these people what you don't want them to see. I'm going to show them a world without you. A world without rules and controls, without borders or boundaries. A world where anything is possible. Where we go from there is a choice I leave to you.
You are listening to High Frequency Radio. I'm your host, Yusuf L. It is Tuesday, November 12th, 2013, broadcasting live from sunny Southern California. Believe it or not, today is not too sunny. One of those unusual days. I want to say what up to all the listening audience out there. Give a shout out to the chat room. Boy, y'all starting to get in earlier and earlier and earlier in the chat room. Airbit, Gabriel Malik, Brian Achieva, show host, the Private Authority Group, Nadar, 1089, and all the other guests in the chat room. What up? Listening to the computers and everybody else is slowly trickling in this morning on the phone line. Peace. Got a real good show lined up for you today. We're going to talk about some foreclosure stuff, and I may have a special guest that's going to join us today. We're going to get into this, some discussion on some foreclosure remedies, get back on track with that. I know, you know, individuals out there are having problems with unlawful detainers and, dispossessories, and they go by different names depending on what state that you're in. Now, I want to talk about that for a quick second, you know, with the foreclosures and everything. Now, the reason I started this show was because of, you know, foreclosures. That's how I started High Frequency Radio. You know, I started it because I had a lot of, clients who, needed help. And, you know, I was growing so big. I had so many clients, it was ridiculous, and it was killing me. And this is one thing I want to tell people about, when you do work for people and don't be so hard on individuals out there who have a lot of clients. Sometimes they get so popular that you just can't help everyone. I mean, you're just one man, and you're getting bombarded by everybody. You just can't help everyone. So I said, you know, I got to do this a different type of way. So that's why I went into the broadcasting and just went in hard every day just telling people, hey, look, this is what they're doing. This is what they're doing. This is what they're doing. Because, and that's also what the reason I'm so kind of, you know, hard on everybody, because it's like what I saw from trying to help people with foreclosures is that people don't want to be responsible, or they want the easy way out. Nobody wants to take the responsibility to learn anything and to understand what their rights are and what their remedies are, because rights equal remedies. I don't know if people know that law, rights equal remedies. So, you know, that's why I started this, and, you know, because I couldn't go into courtrooms helping people. You know, you can't, you know, you sit here and you tell people, okay, you got to do this, you got to do this, and this is how you save your home. And then, you know, they're frustrated because they're trying to save their home, and all this stuff does take a little time to learn. And that's why I say you got to turn off the television. Personally, I couldn't understand how an individual who is about to lose their home would take any time to watch television. You know, honestly, I mean, you don't have time to watch television. You really don't. You ain't got time to do that. You know, this is a study. I mean, we had a very good webinar last night. Gene Keating was, I mean, man, he was just going in showing all types of remedies. The Dodd-Frank Act, there's a foreclosure defense section in the Dodd-Frank Act. His explanation of, you know, these trusts, how they are using the promissory note as an indemnity bond for the certificate holders in the trust, and how there's no deposits from the insurance agencies that are present during the transfer of the loan. I mean, no, it's just things like this that take time. But you listen to somebody say all that, and you're like, man, okay, what are you just saying? And it can sound confusing. It can sound very confusing. But if you take the time to study it, it'll begin to make sense. I mean, it's like, you know, some people email me. Now I had a couple of cats email me, you know, hey, you know, Houston Vale, tell me how to liquidate the liability bond from the insurer of the reservoir. You know, they gave me, you know, all this long terminology. And I said, okay, man, why don't you just say you want to learn how to cash in public officials' bonds? You know, you want to liquidate the bond instead of trying to sound all heavy, because that's what these people do. And then you can begin to sound foolish. You know, they have intentionally made all of this stuff complex. And the truth is always simple. The truth is always simple. They didn't make a deposit. They didn't transfer something. You know, you go through all this terminology that they put on you to find out that it's one really simple thing. And that's really what you're wrestling with. And another thing that you're wrestling with is laziness. People don't want to pick up a dictionary. It's amazing. I'll tell y'all a little story how I grew up. You know, my grandmother, love her to death. You know, she was real kind of hard on me growing up. You know, my grandmother was an English teacher. And my entire life, she has never told me the definition of a word. You know, never in my life has she told me what a word means. You know, I might, when I was little, I used to like to read comic books. And she'd be in a rocking chair, and and I'd be on the floor reading a comic book, and she'd be rocking in her rocking chair. And I said, Grandma, what is the meaning of this word? And she had this bookshelf in the living room with a whole bunch of encyclopedias and dictionaries and everything on it. And she'd be rocking in a rocking chair. She'd just point over at the bookshelf. It used to piss me off. I was like, man, why she just can't tell me the meaning of this word? Because a woman had a vocabulary like anybody. Still to this day, I don't know nobody have vocabulary like her. She used to work with the little crossword, them old real hard-ass crossword puzzles in the newspaper. She'd work them every night before she went to bed, do the whole puzzle. I can't even figure out about two or three of them things on there, but she'd do the whole puzzle every night, one of them
real extra hard ones in the newspaper, just I'd be like, golly, if people like this, it really exists. But she would never, ever tell me the meaning of a word. And it became a habit with me where it would just irk me. And also I read this book called Dianetics, and the reason I read it is because I was reading one of Dr. Malachi York's books, and he made some mention in there that L. Ron Hubbard was an extraterrestrial. And that piqued my interest. I'm like, L. Ron Hubbard, an extraterrestrial? And I didn't even know who the Scientologists were. I mean, that just goes show you how much in the streets I was. I didn't even know who the Scientologists were. And so I got this, I got this book, Dianetics, looked in the back, and I seen all these Scientology places all over the world. I'm like, man, they got Scientology all over the world. Man, who are these people? And I read Dianetics, and the very first page of the book, he said that you should never pass a word without looking it up because you'll lose the entire meaning of everything that you're reading. And I'd already kind of lived my life by that principle anyway, but it was interesting to see somebody kind of break it down into a scientific format of passing words. And because this whole legal system, it was something I needed to see because this whole legal game is a game of words. It's not really for people who don't want to look up words. This is the game. It's a game for people who like to look up words. If you don't like to stop, pick up a dictionary and look up words, This ain't for you. If you don't stop and like to pick up words, you're not gonna save your house. If you don't like to stop and look up words, you're not gonna discharge your debt. If you don't like to stop and look up words, nothing's gonna work for you. Don't cry. Don't blame someone else who's trying to help you. Oh, you stole my money. Don't do that. You, with your lazy ass, don't want to stop and look up words. It is your responsibility to educate yourself. That is the problem. The foreclosure problem that's sweeping across America, the root of the problem that is American citizens are ignorant. You're ignorant. I'm going to say it. They won't say it on other stations. I'll say it. American citizens are ignorant. That's the problem. They most of them are operating about a seventh or eighth grade level. I'm just going to call it what it is. And you don't know that you're operating at that level because the people that you're talking to are all on seventh and eighth grade levels. And it's not saying that it don't mean that people are stupid. It just means is that we become so lazy and so comfortable in just our everyday way of life, we're not pushing ourselves to another level. You just with this television and going out and having a good time, chasing pleasure and everything, it has kind of retarded our development. And we need to get back on track and understand we need to get our development back on track. You're responsible. One of the primary reasons why you're here on this planet is to develop yourself. You got to develop yourself. Well, anyway, I won't go into that too deep. But I was supposed to have a guest today. We're going to talk about, let me see real quick. I'll wait till you get in. I don't see him in queue right yet. I'll wait for him to get in. But let me talk about, let me give an announcement also to the people who attended the webinar. Yes, I will have the video ready today, and we're going to have a folder. Also, I'm going to do a webinar this afternoon for all these forms, these GSA forms, these getting your 9-8 number, your 4-5 number, your WABN. I'm just going to do a webinar just on filling out forms. That's all it is today at 4 p.m. So email me at high-frequency blogs. If you attended the webinar last night, you don't have to attend that because I'm going to put all that information in the box for everybody who attended last night. But I'm going to do a webinar just separate on just that right there because a lot of people, I see they want to get a state number, they want to get a trust number, and I want people to have a real good understanding of it. The number is easy to get. I mean, it's got some people out there. There's people out there charging people like $300-$400 to get one of them numbers. And when you see how easy the number is going to get, you're going to see how you've been hoodwinked. I'm just going to keep it real. I give you a status correction. Well, you know, it's going to be $1,500. I'm going to get you an EIN number and a 98 number, and we're going to do X, Y, Z. And, I mean, man, y'all, let me bring in my guest. I see him online. Let's see. Hold on. And bring me in real quick. Hey, Sharif.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, Sharif Bey.
Yes, sir.
Hey, what's going on, brother? How you doing? Welcome to High Frequency Radio.
I'm doing well, Brother Youssef. First of all, I want to give honors to you, and I appreciate the opportunity to come upon your show and share with the nation some remedy as it relates to foreclosures and debt and any other matter I can provide any information on. But before I say anything else, I want to say to you, brother, in High Frequency Radio, that I give honors and thanks to you. And we don't do enough of that because your show is a law school for the nation. And these schools, if you went to New York and to Donald Trump Real Estate School, they charge you about $40,000 for nothing. He's being sued for that type of behavior. But many times our nation is not grateful to people like you, to men like you, to nation builders like you, for providing information that will help us release these oppressions and these restraints economically that will free us up to be able to do nation building and things that you speak about as far as building schools, building communities. We're not going to be able to do that until we start releasing these restraints, driver's license, mortgages, debts, and things of that nature. So I want to thank you, because many times I hear on your show there is a lot of arguing and bickering about religion. And this is just ridiculous. Another show you did, honors to a brother, Brother Jelani. I mean, I love the brother. He's just laying it down, but I just notice how our people, we just want to argue about the esoterical and the historical perspectives on religion. We get defensive. We fight. And this is just what the Albions want. This is just what society wants. Why can't we just accept and retain information that's given from a nation perspective to educate us and to have us execute those freedoms that you speak of without acting like we were born in AD 57 and we were there when Christ was walking the ground, the earth, and we were there when the Moorish Empire was built? We wasn't there. We don't have any firsthand information. We can believe what we want, but we still must come together and provide remedy and excel in this society and learn how to deal in commerce. So for that, I want to thank you, and I want to just let our people know, if we went to college, we would accept and absorb everything those Albions teach us, from kindergarten all the way up through college. And we accept anything from a Caucasian, we accept it easily. But anything from our nation, we have to question, we have to argue, we have to have debates. I mean, we actually have our nation paying $50 to see two brothers debate on history that they wasn't even present in. We don't know. It's just ridiculous to me. We wasn't there. In my world, being a paralegal and being in a legal arena for so long, we consider that, and you would know the legal terminology of that, that's hearsay. I don't know what happened. Okay? I wasn't there. Somebody told me. That is not a provable fact in any court of law. And if we're going to talk about law, we have to talk about what is facts, beliefs, and hearsay. And everything we talk about as it relates to religion is hearsay. Everybody, I don't care if you're white, you're black, you're purple, or you're green, you believe in what you want to believe in, but we have to stop fighting like there are facts and we're competent fact witnesses to those events that occurred hundreds, thousands of years ago.
That's very true. I mean, I often think about that myself. I heard some people bring that up, too. It's like, you know, how do you know, you know, I always say question the source. because you don't know if the source who is giving you this information is biased in some kind of way, or, you know, you really don't know. And that's why, you know, you see me, I concentrate on the present. I don't really go into that a lot. It's like, okay, how are we going to do this business? How are we going to build this nation? Because my thinking is this, okay, we did have great people in the past, but what are the great people of today? We're making history right now. What are people going to look at 200 years from now and what they going to say about us? Are they going to say, oh, that was that generation where, I don't know what happened, that was the dark ages right there. We just wasn't doing nothing during that time. You know, what are they going to say
right,
about
Brother
us?
That's exactly. Brother Youssef, Brother Jelani said something. I don't know the individual. I've listened to him on both of your shows and listened to a lot of your shows. And I hear you plead and cry from within. Because the information that you're able to attain, you're trying to give it freely, and you don't charge anything to listen to your radio show, and you bleed sometimes. You cry. I've heard you on the show try to push this across to people, but then all people will go on the street, and a light-skinned pale guy will tell us something, and we'll just jump all on it. We'll fill out applications. We'll sign. We'll say we're under threat and duress, but we still sign. I mean, we do these things. Brother Delali said one thing that resonated with me, and it still resonates with me today. He said, brother, I do not want my kids having this same argument 20 years from now. We got to stop this foolishness. We're still arguing about who was Jesus, who was Noble Drew Ali, what did he do, where was he from, what did he stop, what store did he eat at, what kind of shoes did he wear? This is psych nonsense. What is going to help us right now? And everything you deal with on this show deals with the now. We're still arguing about 1,000 years ago. I'm making money. If we want to talk about mortgages, that's what I do. I deal in consumer debt, mortgages. I deal in securitization and all those things. I'm making money. While everybody's arguing about religion and what's this, I'm making money in six figures, and I do it quite easily. And I'm going to share those things with us on the show, and hopefully our people will absorb the information and go, like you always say, go to the book and read it for yourself so you can get an understanding in your own speed, in your own spirit, in your own way. Read it 30 times, 10 times, however you obtain and retain information. And hopefully we're able to give you some relief on your mortgage, on your debts, and things of that nature. And that should pretty much give you a whole lot, free up a whole lot of capital for you to start nation building, for you to start really paying for education. We're doing a big event in Atlanta that you are definitely invited to, and we'll be one of the speakers on there. You'll be able to come and purchase yourself a ticket, or if you live in Atlanta, you'll be able to come and really get remedy, not a bunch of process stuff like you say to do a name correction and a status correction. We're charging $1,500. I mean, this is just ridiculous, because and it's our fault, Brother Youssef, because we don't want to read. Because there's nothing out here that you can do, that I can do, or any of these other brothers do any other person cannot do by just reading. Hey, brother, just give me the information. Just lead me to the water, and I'll get my own straw, and I'll drink. You understand what I mean? I don't need you to do it for me. I don't need you to hold the straw for me. I don't need you to pour it in the cup. Save yourself. Let me do that myself and keep that $1,500 in my pocket or that $500 or whatever have you. But we are so lazy, and we just don't want to do things. We are a microwavable society. We just want everything done to us, which is why this Bar Association thrives so much, because we don't want to study and read. Even when you are on this show twice a week, five times a week, saying read, read, read. The prophet said read, study, 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 and study some more. But now we rather watch Kim Kardashian, we rather watch, you know, Atlanta Housewives, and we want to take in that programming that our television sets provide for us and become under that osmosis as opposed to reality. So I just wanted to get that off of my chest. And again, I like to give you honors because you are a pioneer. You are a leader. Okay, you are a true seeker, and you have the knowledge enough to bless the society. And because you do it, and you do it just relentlessly, I don't understand why many people on this show is not free. The information you give, brother, I didn't even think you had that type of knowledge. Okay, and you're dropping knowledge that Everybody should be like, hey, Brother Youssef, I got my home cleared up. Brother Youssef, got rid of a couple of debt collectors. Not only that, got my credit cleaned up and got some money. That's what I'm going to talk about. That's how I'm going to show you how to do it. I'm not going to argue with you. I'm not going to tell you a whole bunch of I'm not going to give you a bunch of rhetoric. I'm going to tell you what I know. I don't do anything. When I go to the lab and I mix different processes and procedures, I don't come out of the lab until I have a potion that has been certified and that has worked. So I don't speak about things that I think or procedures, if you want to deem that an appropriate word. I talk about what I know, what works, and what makes me money. Peace.
All right, brother. All right. Thank you for the kind words. I'm relentless at it, man, because something – it's in my spirit, man. It's just in my spirit. I mean, you know, it's like, I don't know, I can't explain it either, you know, but it was just in my spirit. It burned in my spirit. And I just, you know, I just push it. It's all I know how to do. And I know that we need to have some sort of form where we can come together and we can just get to the truth. And prejudices and biasness, and I'm like, I don't hear none of that. Let's just get, okay, how are we going to do this thing? You know, anybody want to talk, you can talk. You see, I open up the floor to anybody if I feel right. Like they can, you know, they got something that they can offer, you know. But, you know, I'm just going to just let anybody just talk. But it's like, you know, it's like, hey, I'm not biased to anything but anybody. I'm interested in the truth, and I'm interested in helping our people, and that's it. That's where it begins and ends for me, the truth and helping my people. But, hey, man, I'm going to give you the floor. I'm going to let you do your presentation. I'm going to fall back. And I guess you listen to the show, you know how we do it. You know, I'll give you the floor, then we do a little, you want to do a question and answer, we can do that. But it's on you, all right?
Peace, peace. Again, I'm honored to be here on the show. My name is Brother Sharif. I am a paralegal by trade for the last 10 years. I've worked with attorneys doing strategic support, providing strategic information to attorneys on how to pursue certain cases, specifically in the mortgage arena, securitization, deeds, security deeds, mortgages, things of that nature. So I've done securitization for quite a long time. I've worked in the arena with attorneys, and I'm outside of the arena now because I realize that I have to uplift my people by extrapolating that information from that society and bringing it to our society to be used against the very people, which is the Bar Association, from continuing to oppress us with debt. And I want to make this clear, whether you're dealing with a mortgage debt, a telephone bill as a debt, a credit card as a debt, it is all considered a debt. And what I'm going to discuss is how you differentiate what type of debt you're dealing with. Now, I've listened to many gurus out here that speak about mortgages and foreclosures. I've read many cases. Nobody probably in the sound of my weak voice has studied cases and case law as I have. The thing is that you don't need it necessarily. All you need to know is what kind of debt you are dealing with. There are three different statutes and laws that I'm going to speak about, and these apply to all of your mortgages and any debt. It is named and called the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act. It is 15 U.S.C. 1692. Okay? And there's another one called the Fair Credit Reporting Act, the FCRA, 15 U.S.C. 1681. And then you have your state local consumer debt collection laws. In New York, for instance, you will have New York GBL 349. In Ohio, you have your consumer, whatever your consumer protection laws is for your particular state. I hear a lot about, when it comes to mortgages, people don't really know what mortgages are, what debt is, what debt is not, what a legitimate instrument is, what a legitimate debt is, and we often, many times, that lack of knowledge causes us to lose our homes. I am telling everyone, there is no reason for anyone to lose their home in these day and ages. No one. There's nobody that I deal with that's ever lost a home. Okay? And I'm not bragging. I'm just telling you what I know. You have to understand that much of the propaganda that's put out is put out by attorneys, by the Bar Society. And the Bar Society is very good for carnivals. What do I mean by carnivals? I've thrown out a lot of colored balls into the woods and have you chase them, while the real remedy is right in front of you. They do that. Some of those colored balls are Tilla and Respa and Truth in Lending, and all those have their basis. Sure, they have relevance when you are dealing with a mortgagor or a creditor or a lender, okay? Notice those three, and that's it. So many of us, when I hear on many calls, when they speak about mortgages, they speak like they're speaking to the creditor, to the lender, to the person who allegedly lent funds. I will submit to you that none of y'all these days are dealing with any creditors, any lenders, and any mortgagors. Why? I'm sure many of you have assignments of mortgages. I'm sure many of those assignments, 9 times out of 10, was assigned while the alleged, and notice my wording, because my wording is very important. It's the wording that you will use in any court. The alleged lender, the alleged creditor, or the alleged mortgage has been assigned after it was in default. So that falls under the FDCPA, the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act. I hear many times, I see these QWRs, I see these qualified written requests is what they're called under 12 U.S.C. 2605, the RESPA and the TILA and all those things. And I see a lot of those letters. Some of them are 8 pages long. Some of them are 2 pages long. But all of those letters are null and void. Why? Before you can communicate with someone dealing with mortgages these days, you have to first do what? You have to identify who you're talking to. Okay, before you start firing off questions, I hear Brother Youssef says all the time, don't go into municipal traffic court talking about the Constitution. They're going to lock your ass up. They're going to lock your ass up because that's the proper venue. Okay, don't talk to a creditor or a lender about being a debt collector because they're going to ignore your letter. Again, on the other side, don't send a QWR to a debt collector. What is a debt collector? Well, let's explain what a debt collector is. If all of you out there will pull up a PDF version of the FDCPA, which is the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act, you will see on 1692.3, and I'm giving you the information. I'm going to tell you exactly where to go, all right? You will look under the meaning of debt collector, all right? And I'm reading it for you so you understand. The term creditor, I'll start at creditor. We're at 1692A, 15 U.S.C., FDCPA. The term consumer, I'll start at consumer, which is you. First of all, listen to the meaning. The term consumer, and we're under 1692A3, means any natural person, not a corporation, not a trust, any natural person obligated or allegedly obligated to pay any debt, okay? The term creditor, 1692A4, the term creditor means any person who offers or extends credit, creating a debt, or to whom a debt is owed, but such terms does not include any person to the extent that he receives an assignment or transfer of a debt in default solely for the purpose of facilitating collection of such debt for another. I'm going to read that again. The term creditor means any person who offers or extends credit, creating a debt, or to whom a debt is owed. But such term does not include any person to the extent that he receives an assignment or transfer of a debt in default solely for the purpose of facilitating collection of such debt for another. Did I just not name, and within that meaning, okay, what a creditor is and what a debt collector is and what it does not include? When I just mentioned assignment of a debt, it clearly says here the term does not include any person to the extent he receives an assignment, most of you people will have an assignment of mortgage, an assignment of deed. If you're in California, assignment of deed of trust. If you're in New York, it's assignment of a mortgage. If you're in Georgia, it's assignment of a security deed. Okay? So it doesn't include a person that received an assignment or transfer of the debt while it's in default. So that means they're not a creditor. All right? Let's go down to the term debt, which is number five. The term debt means any obligation or alleged obligation of a consumer to pay money arising out of a transaction in which the money, property, insurance, or services, which are the subject of the transaction, are primarily for personal, family, or household purposes. That can be your automobile. That can be your mortgage. That can be your home, your property. Whether or not such obligation has been reduced to judgment. Okay? The term debt collector, A6. Means any person who uses an instrumentality of interstate commerce or the mails in any business, the principal purpose of which is collection of any debt. One who regularly collects or attempts to collect directly or indirectly debts owed or due or asserted to be owed or due to another. Okay? Notwithstanding the inclusion provided by Clause F, of the last sentence of this paragraph, the term includes, listen, any creditor who in the process of collecting his own debts uses any name other than his own, which would indicate a third person is collecting or attempting to collect such debt. Now, I'm going to read that one more time quick. The term debt collector means any person who uses any instrumentality of interstate commerce or the mail in any business, the principal purpose of which is the collection of any debt, or who regularly collects or attempts to collect indirectly or directly debts owed or due or asserted to be owed or due another. Notwithstanding the last sentence of this paragraph, the term includes any creditor who in the process of collecting his own debts uses any other name than his own, which would indicate a third person is collecting or attempting to collect the debt. What I just named to you in the term debt collector and debt is what you are dealing with today. If you get any notice from a servicer, a debt collector, okay, that derives from an assignment of mortgage, they are, or if the creditor, you got a mortgage with Citibank, okay, the mortgage, your mortgage documents, I don't know how many people read it, but if you read it, I'm sure you would never face foreclosure. Because if you read it, you will see that many of the things that they do today is prohibited by the contract itself, if they're a party to the contract. What do I mean by that, Brother Sharif? They're a debt collector. So if the creditor, Citibank, hires a servicer, okay, well, let's not even go to the servicer. Let's say Citibank is your original alleged creditor, and they allege that they loan you funds to purchase your property, okay? If Citibank sends that collection or sells that collection or sells collection services to ABC Debt Collection Company, and ABC Debt Collection Company sends you a letter saying that, hey, you owe this money on this mortgage that you got from Citibank, they are considered a debt collector, because they are collecting in the name of a different entity besides the creditor, which in this case would have been Citibank. They are a third party sending you a demand for payment, alleging that you owe a debt to Citibank, but it necessarily doesn't state that they are working for Citibank. They're just making a demand. So, as I've told you, from that law falls under a debt collector, under the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act. You are not dealing with mortgagors. You are not dealing with creditors. You are not dealing with lenders. So tell me, why the hell are you sending them a QWR? You have to identify what language you need to speak based on the jurisdictional issue that you find yourself within. Again, if Brother Youssef said, don't go to the traffic court, talk about Constitution. You can't talk about that. They're going to hold you in contempt. They're going to lock you up because you don't know what you're talking about. So when you're dealing with a debt collector, the first thing you want to do is identify them, know your situation, know you have an assignment. You have an assignment that was passed on to a debt collector most of the time. If they obtained your loan while it was in default, which is 9 times out of 10, then you're not dealing with a creditor anymore. It changes the language. It changes your communications with that person, with that entity. It changes how you deal with them. You have to know what law or what contract pertains to that person. Okay, so if the creditor, while you were making good payments with Citibank, if they made certain demands, do they fall under the FDCPA? Well, no. If Citibank, you got a mortgage with Citibank, and Citibank calls you and say, hey, I need your payment, do they fall under the FDCPA? No. If they sell that service out to somebody else, to a debt collector, while you're in default, are they a debt collector? Yes. So many times, because we don't know, we start communicating with debt collectors like they're creditors and mortgagors and lenders when they're not. And in fact, they're so stupid, they don't even know what the contract, what the mortgage agreement says. Because nine times out of ten, if they did, they wouldn't be sending you the notices of default, notices of intent to foreclose, they use all the language of a creditor and a mortgagor and a lender, but they're not neither. So let me ask you a question. When you get that letter, what do you do? Well, most of us start sending out QWRs, chiller letters, cancellation, rescission of signatures, revocation of power of attorney, all that nonsense, when the simple question is this. I received this communication from you, and I'm not sure what capacity you have to send me this type of communication threatening to take an action against my property. So pursuant to, you can add 12 U.S.C. 2605, QWR RESPA, and 1692, okay, 15 U.S.C. 1692, and your state consumer protection law, OCGA, whatever, whatever, New York GBL, whatever, whatever, I need the following information so I can determine how I am to communicate with you. Because I noticed that there's an assignment of mortgage that was filed in the county recorder, and it says that this loan allegedly was assigned to you after default. Based on my knowledge, that would deem you to be a debt collector. So you sending me a notice of intent to foreclose is prohibited and a violation of federal and state law. So first, what am I doing? Am I trying to identify who this person is so I can know what law to apply to them? Do I speak to them like a creditor or a lender, or do I speak to them like a debt collector? They're governed by different laws. So I just can't send out a notice that don't apply to them and say, well, they never answer. Well, they never answer because you wasn't speaking their language, just like the court would never answer you on a constitutional challenge on a traffic ticket. They'll just ignore you because it doesn't apply. So the debt collector is going to not answer you, or they'll try to answer you, but they're not able to provide the information a lender or a creditor would. So they give you as much as they can trying to sound like one, but at all times relevant, you'll see on the end of that notice, it'll say this is an attempt to collect a debt, and any information will be used for that purpose. So what is that? That is their jurisdictional statement, as Brother Youssef will say it. That is letting you know you are receiving this communication from a debt collector. I don't know what's wrong with us that we can't understand that. How can you send me a notice of intent to foreclose acting like you're a lender or a creditor, but then on the bottom of your notice have that you're a debt collector? You can't be both. You have to be one or the other. Either you're a debt collector, then I'm going to apply this law to you, or you're a lender or creditor. And then in that sense, I have to communicate with you differently. So I'm going to push you to, when you're dealing with property and foreclosure, I'm going to show you within the FDCPA how it covers all kind of debt, okay? Any kind of debt, all right? Now, we're going to go to 1692 in the FDCPA, I. Attorneys won't tell you this. Many people don't discuss it. This is what I do when I deal with mortgages. This is how I'm successful. Everybody would talk about quiet title and all those type of things. You know, how can you quiet title against a debt collector that doesn't even have title? What are you quieting? The original lender is gone. Your loan has been sold into the secondary market, meaning it was securitized. Okay, who are you quieting title against? Somebody that's not even who they say they are. You haven't identified them. So you're talking to quiet title, and the court's just like, you can't quiet title. I mean, you don't. First of all, you don't have the proper parties, and how are you quieting title? First of all, you have to do your due diligence in your due process. So let's look at 1692I, 15 U.S.C., FDCPA, legal actions by debt collectors. Any debt collector who brings any action on a debt against any consumer shall, in the case of an action to enforce an interest in real property, securing the consumer's obligation, bring such action only in a judicial district or similar legal entity in which such real property is located. Okay? That's all I'm going to read. I'm going to stop there. All right? So we all know, Brother Youssef would know, I get an American Express card. I take my American Express card. I pay good for a year. I went, you know, and then things fall on bad times. But that month I went and bought me some 22-inch reels for my car. I bought some TVs for my car, bought me a living room set, and I put a new roof on my home, and I charged it to American Express, $20,000, let's just say, okay? So, okay, so I don't pay the bill. American Express sends me demands for payments. I don't pay. I don't have the money, okay? And they charge it off and sell it to a debt collector, all right? The debt collector will send you money and say, hey, Brother Youssef, calling you about that American Express bill you owe 20 grand on, went into default, you didn't pay the payments. You know, you can make a payment arrangement with us, or, you know, how are you going to pay it, all right? First thing Brother Youssef should do is be like, who are you? And what debt are you talking about? All right? But many times the American Bar Association and the courts and all debt collectors really rely upon our inability to discern what information is in their communication, and we immediately go into discussing subject matter. Oh, I know, you know, I just had a bad job. You know, my job, I lost my job, and my wife got sick, and I just couldn't pay it. We begin already defending without the proper way, which is, I don't recall any debt with American Express, and I use the word recall. I don't recall a debt with American Express. So they're going to be like, well, you had it a card. And be like, well, I need you to send me some proof, which is under 1692G, validation of debt, validation of verification of debt. Well, I need you to send me something in writing, man, about whatever alleged debt you're talking about I owe. Okay? So they're going to do what? They're going to say, okay, they're going to take you to court, small claims, if it allows up to $20,000, because that's what you allegedly owed on American Express, and then they take you to court, they're going to try to get a money judgment. Am I right? That's exactly what they're going to try to do. That's all they can do. But what they don't do as a debt collector is what? Have they ever showed up to your house and said, hey, I got the receipts where you bought those 22-inch rims on your car, that living room set in the living room, the white leather, and you bought some TVs in your car, so I'm going to come take that off because you charged that. Do they ever do that? Absolutely not. Why? They can't. Why can't they? They're debt collectors. They can't take property, although you purchased the property with that credit card. They can't take the property. They can sue you on a money judgment. And I just explained to you in 1692I, if it's about real property, can they come take your house? If there was a sign of mortgage in default, can they come take your house? I just showed you in the law it says they can't. And if they try to deal with real property, they have to do what? Bring it in a judicial district. I'll say it again. Bring it in a judicial district. Now, what does that negate? That negates all non-judicial foreclosures. Okay? You're a debt collector. You can't take property. They can sue you on the $200,000 you allegedly borrowed from the lender, allegedly. They can sue you. Now, they can do that, and they shouldn't win there either. Because what does a debt collector have to do? Prove that you owe a debt. What does the federal rules of evidence say, which is what you should be reading? How can you prove 5 years ago, prior to your arrival, that I got any loan? I got any mortgage? Oh, we got a copy of the mortgage contract. Well, read the federal rules of evidence. Is that evidence? How many fabricated notes, assignments, mortgages, debt instruments, how many does this bar society have to provide for you to understand that can't be evidence? If that's the case, then that 10-cent piece of paper represents $200,000 in property. Everybody would be rich. So the rules of evidence say that you have to provide evidence, admissible evidence of whatever loan. What do I do, Brother Yusuf? I don't know what loan you're talking about. Show me the money. Don't show me the note. What a note? Come on, please. Like, are you going to tell me that a copy of a note represents my real property? I mean, I laughed people all the way out of the court, including attorneys. What evidence do you have? What competent fact witness are you able to bring to the court that says that I got a loan 10 years ago, that I'm in default? And you, as a debt collector who has no admissible evidence, all you have is hearsay statements, or you're going to rely upon is publicly filed documents, which any 18-year-old or 10-year-old with a computer can pull up. Does that mean that everything in the public records, you can just access it and start taking people's houses based on the fact that I may have executed a consumer transaction? I never say mortgage, I never say deed, I never say loan, because how many of us can prove you ever got a loan from these entities that purport to lend you money? We all know if you're involved in securitization, they didn't loan you anything. And you can ask for the note, sure, the UCC supports that, but what I ask for is simply prove your debt. Don't just give me some hearsay documents that hasn't been authenticated. Did you sign that document? I have no idea if I signed that document. That's a copy. We're in the computer age. I can put your face and your signature on a $100 bill and make it look good. Don't ask me any stupid question like that. I don't know. Show me the original. And give me an affidavit or a competent fact witness that's going to testify. They witnessed me sign or execute that particular document. May I have entered into some consumer transaction with this lender? Maybe. But it's not our job to prove that. It's the plaintiff, the debt collector, the alleged creditor, to prove that I executed that contract and that I received proper consideration for it, and that this particular entity, Citibank, as an example, provided those funds or was the source of those funds. Okay, so let's go further, Brother Sharif. The debt collector comes about, they assign it to different banks. Sometimes they assign it, and your assignment will say, you know, for $10 in valuable consideration, okay, we received this loan, okay? You know, in order to sue someone, you have to have a monetary injury, okay? Meaning that if you were a lender and you loaned somebody $200,000, you have to show that you actually loaned them $200,000 and you're injured to the amount of $200,000 or $150,000 if they paid their payments for 5 years. You have to prove that injury. So let me ask you, how can a debt collector who, in fact, buys defaulted debt for 5 or 10 cents on the dollar, you can go to the FDIC website, and you can get together, if you want to talk about nation building, and since all of us wants to stay asleep, why don't we just put our money together and go buy $1 million worth of debt for $100,000? That's what you can do. All right? So they go buy debt, 5-10 cents on a dollar. So say they bought your $200,000 debt, okay? They bought it for what? $20,000, okay? And then they're going to try to sue you for $200,000. What's wrong with that picture? Well, you wasn't injured in the amount of $200,000. And, in fact, you never loaned me any money. So how can you sue me on a $200,000 property or sue me in court for $200,000 in money when you didn't loan me $200,000? You're a debt collector. You wasn't injured financially or harmed. But what you do before that, before you get into any of that subject matter, is you take them to court once they don't, when you request and do a valid debt validation request. I need you to send me some information before I send you another payment. I need to identify who you are. I'm aware of mortgage fraud. I'm aware of what the banks are doing. And you have to be aware that most of these debt collection companies are owned by attorneys. They run these firms because we're so sleep, it's easy money. 95% of debt collection cases result in a default judgment, meaning people relying on their guilt, and we're honest people by nature. We know when we got a debt, we feel bad. Some of us leave our houses when the bank said, we're going to kick you out. And they'd be like, well, you know, I owe the money, so I'm going to go ahead and leave. we all study the law, and they're like, now, wait a minute. I don't think they can take my house. They're debt collectors. They charge that off. So, yeah, I'm going to hold tight and try to get some identification. First thing they do with police officers stop you. Can I see your identification, please? I need to identify who you are. Mr. Debt Collector, I need to see who you are. You're saying you're a servicer, but you're a debt collector. So I don't have too many mentioning of servicer within my mortgage agreement. Okay, everything in your mortgage agreement, security deed of trust, tells you specifically and clearly that the lender has the power to do whatever it is they are able to do within the four corners of that contract. The lender, it doesn't say servicer. Give you an example right quick. Brother Youssef loans me money. Okay, well, Brother Youssef loans you, the listening audience, $1 million, one of you. And he says, all right, he can be a loan shark. I'm going to loan you this money, and you're going to pay me back $100 a month for the next 20 years. That's the agreement. Brother Youssef is the lender. He's the creditor, okay? He's the mortgagor. So Brother Youssef, you know, you pay your payments to Brother Youssef, he's cool with you. Brother Youssef may hire a servicer, a henchman, okay, a hitman. Say, listen, you make sure that, you know, Brother so-and-so pays his payments all the time. I'm too busy making loans, taking care of business, so I have a servicer that's going to take care of all your questions. He's going to get all your payments. He's going to handle any administrative work that needs to be done. You talk to him if there's a problem with the servicing of your account, okay? That's it. That's the only power the servicer has. He can collect money. He can talk to you about repairs on a house. If you got a problem with your insurance, you'll call the servicer. All right? When you pay off that loan, you will pay who? Not the servicer. You will pay Mr. Youssef. He loaned you the money. Okay? So when you get a letter, let's say I stop paying my payments or the person stops paying their payments, the servicer, which is me, will let Brother Youssef know, hey, so-and-so stopped making his payments. He's about 2 months behind. Brother Youssef might say, well, I know Brother Sharif. Let him go. He'll catch up. Don't do nothing about it. Leave it alone. We're like, okay, no problem, boss. I'm the servicer. No problem, boss, but we're going to do that. Or Brother Youssef might say, you know what, go ahead and foreclose on him. Go ahead and start sending out letters that he's in default, okay? But that letter has to come from who? The servicer? It could. But the servicer has to mention Brother Youssef. He has to say, Brother Youssef, the lender, said that he wants his money in 30 days or he's going to take your property. It can't come from the servicer because Brother Youssef is not going to let a servicer just do what he wants with his money. He's going to give that servicer directions and instructions, and when time for him to step in, he's going to say, okay, this has nothing to do with servicing. This has to do with the fact that I'm about to take your property back because you're not paying me. So now Brother Youssef will begin communicating with you on his letterhead, or he may tell the servicer, go ahead and send out a letter, but make sure it's my name on it so the property owner understands that I am saying this, not just the servicer. But many times today we get threatening notices from the servicer. We're going to foreclose on you. And it will never mention the lender. It will never, ever mention the lender. It will say BAC Home Loans is going to foreclose on you and we're going to take your property. It's a secure amount. The first thing you're supposed to do is sue them. Why? You want to stop foreclosure? You sue them. Why? Because can a servicer send you a notice threatening to take your property in the servicer's name? Absolutely not. That notice has to come per your contract from the lender. The lender has to step in and begin to execute those provisions because he's the only one entitled to do so. Okay? So that's the first thing that you do. Identifying who you're dealing with first. So as soon as you get that first notice of intent to foreclose from a servicer, you're suing. How do you sue, Brother Sharif? Make it real simple. You put up a simple complaint, which all of us should know how to draft a simple complaint, under the FDCPA, under the consumer protection laws of your state. And you can do one or two things. You can go to the federal court, okay, if you're going to rely on the FDCPA, which is federal law, or you can go into small claims court. And what are you looking for? You're not looking to make $1 million. You're not looking to make get rich. You're looking to simply say, I received this notice from this servicer. I asked them to identify themselves. They appear to be a debt collector, meaning that they're governed under 15 U.S.C. 1692. They failed to validate or verify the debt or provide admissible evidence of this alleged debt. I do not recall any transaction with this particular servicer or debt collector, and their identity is unknown to me. Therefore, it appears that they fall under the FDCPA. And the FDCPA reads that they cannot send any threatening letter, okay, or threaten to take an action that they legally cannot take. That's one of your causes of action under the FDCPA. They cannot misrepresent the debt. And let me tell you how they do that. Many times you'll get debt collectors sending you statements, and they, what they're doing is just they're looking at what you borrowed, okay, from the public records, the mortgage. And they get some information from the old creditor or whatever kind of information they receive, but it really amounts to just some statements, some hearsay statements that the last creditor said you owed $100,000, when in your head you know, nah, I owe like $80,000. How can that debt collector prove that you owe that money? Well, he would have to bring somebody from the original lender, a competent fact witness, to court or provide an affidavit from that competent fact witness that says, listen, I know that this person owes $200,000, all right? How many times have they done that with you folks that's been in foreclosure? You allow these attorneys to come in there, and they'll put together a bunch of case law, 20 pages of nonsense, saying that you got a debt, you got a loan. You don't reject that. You don't object to it. You don't deny that you got a loan. You don't deny the authenticity of the mortgage document that they provided, which is hearsay documentation. You don't deny the fact that you owe them anything. And importantly, you don't stop them from talking as if there's creditors or lenders. You let them use language and extract language out of your mortgage deed, the parts that they feel that is useful, and you allow them to communicate as if they're a creditor. Basically, they're piggybacking off of a public file document that portrays some consumer transaction, and you're allowing them to speak as creditors without checking them and be like, hey, wait a minute. Who are you? You're a stranger to this contract. I don't know who you are. You're speaking in a language like a mortgager or a lender, but I'm showing you with clear evidence that you're a debt collector. So you got to change your language. I don't know who you think you are to be speaking out of language of a contract that has nothing to do with you. You're a debt collector, and I'm just here for the court to certify that you are a debt collector, and let's get the language right first. Let's see what language you're supposed to speak, because if you're a debt collector, we're not going to talk too much about, you know, Section 15 or Section 22 or all the other things we like to argue. We're going to talk debt collector language, meaning that you really don't have anything that can prove that I owe you a debt. You really don't have any information to prove that I owe this amount of money. And because I'm the only competent fact witness that was there when this consumer transaction took place, really I'm the only competent fact witness to be able to state fact thereof. So, Mr. Attorney, unless you're willing to be cross-examined, unless you're a competent fact witness, I don't need you to be talking. Hearsay is not allowed, ever, not in any court. So unless you standing next to somebody that's a competent fact witness and it's not going to be the debt collector, they can't provide their own evidence that sort of corroborates what they want to do. They got to come with admissible evidence. And unless you have that, it's not going to be too much talking. It's not going to be too much billable hours you're going to be able to obtain, Mr. Attorney. I'm here to get it cut and dry. You're a debt collector. Judge, I just need an order saying that they violated the FDCPA by sending me this letter that was ambiguous. And let me tell you what the FDCPA says. For all you people that like to sound educated and like to, you know, write in legalese and like to want to understand that, the FDCPA was written for the least sophisticated consumer, meaning that all communications from debt collectors cannot be these very legally drafted letters that will confuse you, meaning the least sophisticated consumer is Bubba that just went to high school. He needs to be able to read that communication like, oh, okay, they're asking me for money. And they're saying on the bottom of their letter that they're a debt collector, but then within the letter, the body of the letter, they're talking like they're creditors. So, Judge, I'm confused. So I want you to determine whether that letter is a violation of the FDCPA, whether it's something that a least sophisticated consumer can read and understand and be able to act upon, because it says two different things. They're wearing one hat in the beginning saying that they're a creditor, and then on the bottom they're saying they're a debt collector. And the judge is going to say, well, you received that loan, you received an assignment of that loan while it was in default, right, Mr. Debt Collector? Well, yeah, an alleged debt. Oh, yeah, okay, well, then you're a debt collector. So I would determine that this letter does violate the FDCPA, or the court will definitely make clear that, yeah, you are a debt collector. Now, what did that just do? Whether the judge gave you $100 or $1,000, which is their liability under FDCPA, it might be $100 under your state consumer protection laws, but the order is worth its gold because now you have an order from the court saying that you're a debt collector. So now all I got to do is play the FDCPA, the FCRA, and my consumers' protection laws. I can play with you all day long. I'm not going to talk mortgage to you. You're not a mortgagor. You didn't lend me any money. You didn't loan me any money. You're not a party to that transaction. You're totally a stranger to that transaction. So my communications with you change. You want to stop a foreclosure? You can do that all day long. Each time they send you a letter, you sue them right back in small claims court, change the case number, change the date, and you file that same complaint. Be like, Judge, they sent me another letter. And you already determined that they're a debt collector. We all know they're a debt collector. They're continuing to say they're going to foreclose on my property when 1692H says that they have to bring a judicial action. So this circumvents the non-judicial foreclosure because there's not supposed to be any non-judicial foreclosure, right? Because FDCPA says, 1692H said, look, if it's got to do with real estate, y'all can't do nothing outside the court. You got to bring it in the court. And God knows if they bring you in court on a FDCPA violation or a foreclosure under the FDCPA, I think the most novice of our more should be able to smack them around. So I'll just yield right now for questions, and I can go on forever, but my purpose is to inform the people that you have to know who you're dealing with. And you have to quiet title. That's not the immediate action you need to do. The second thing you have to understand is there is a statute of limitations on all debts, statute of limitations in your state, maybe 4 years, maybe 3 years, maybe 6 years. Why is that important, Brother Sharif? That's important because many times they're bringing this action against you years after the statute of limitation. What does that mean? They can't even sue you on the debt anymore. And that's the only right they have to do as a debt collector is to try to sue you monetarily for that debt. But again, the provisions are still the same. They got to prove you had a debt. And who's going to help them? Most of the time we help them. Yeah, I got that loan, but, I sent the cancellation letter. I sent the RESPA letter. Or, I lost my job. We automatically start implicating ourselves and start speaking without even knowing who we're talking to. Like, I don't know, what contract are you talking about? Why that contract? Who executed that contract? That doesn't look like my signature. I need that to be authenticated. That doesn't look like the contract, the consumer transaction I executed. I need you to prove that. I need you to bring in some witnesses. I don't recall at all executing that contract with anybody. Okay? Is that legal? Absolutely is legal. I've had relationships with women that I don't want to recall anymore. I forget about them. Somebody says, hey, Brother Sharif, you remember my son? I don't remember her. You remember that girl that, oh, yeah, I kind of forgot about her. Man, I don't recall her at all. I don't even keep her in memory. I don't recall. I need you to prove that transaction from front to back, and they can't do it. So, Brother Youssef, I'll yield out, and I'll go further. I'm sure questions will have me go into other dimensions and areas of this particular mortgage situation.
That was some fantastic information. I'm sitting here like, wow, I know a lot. And I'm like, man, I didn't think about that. Yeah, I like how you put that, I'm sitting over here. Yeah, that's nice. I know that almost it's a lot of people with their hands up, a lot of people listening. I'm going to start off with a question because I know this is going to be a big question. What about the unlawful detainer?
Great. I'm glad you brought that up. I'm glad you brought that up. And I'm familiar with it from California perspective, which is forcible. Well, in Arizona, it's a forcible detainer, unlawful detainer in California, other places. And how I handle simply, and I'll go into Georgia for people that don't know, and I'm going to share some with you because I know you had some ties to Georgia, and if you had this information, I think you'd still be here owning a bunch of properties. But I'll say on unlawful detainer. Once you go through a foreclosure, there's an issue of title. You have title to a property. You are not made a tenant by operation of that mortgage. If a lender has a problem with title, the reason why these non-judicial foreclosures are so common amongst them because they take action that you can't control. Sure, people will tell you, go ahead and get a restraining order, go ahead and sue them first. Man, listen, let me tell you something. If a burglar is going to steal, break into your house, he's going to bring it to your house whether there's bars in there, whether you have a security code, alarm, he's going to have the combination to be able to break that. I don't stop these thieves from doing anything. What I do stop them by suing them under the conditions that I told you. But if they're going to do a non-judicial foreclosure, that doesn't change anything because you know what? I'm still a title holder. So let's talk about unlawful detainer. When I show up to unlawful detainer court, I'm just like, okay, this court has jurisdiction over evictions under the Landlord-Tenant Act, right? Okay, well, can the plaintiff provide with me the lease agreement that deems me as a tenant and them being a landlord? What lease agreement are they providing for you saying that they did a non-judicial foreclosure, which you have no control of? They did it in their back office, at their buddy's house, at another law firm, at some building around the corner, at 7-Eleven. So now they're going to come and they're going to somehow that process, which is not a judicial process, transforms me into a tenant. Well, show me the landlord-tenant agreement, because I'm sure some of you on this call has been in eviction court. The landlord is going to say, look, I got this lease agreement. It says in the lease agreement that if he didn't pay by the 5th, it's going to be $50. If he didn't pay by the 10th, I can start eviction proceedings. So he has a law that he's executing. His jurisdiction is a Landlord-Tenant Act for that particular state. Okay, so that's what he's going to come in there and say. You know, Judge, here's my tenant agreement. He signed it. The tenant signed it, therefore they agreed, and contract is the law, they agreed to these provisions set forth in that landlord-tenant agreement, in that lease. Do y'all have a lease when y'all go in there on a foreclosure? Judge, you don't have jurisdiction. Your jurisdiction is eviction. I'm not a tenant. So therefore, if this plaintiff wants to evict me, he will first have to deal with the issue of title. So do we need to transfer this or remove this to a superior court to deal with the issue of title? Because you cannot make me a tenant when I'm a title owner. I can't stop them from foreclosing, Judge. I'll do a temporary restraining order. They're saying, no, you know, you'll do this. You run all these little, again, those colored balls that's thrown in the woods. But what it boils down to is, am I a tenant? Can this plaintiff prove that I have an agreement with them, an executed agreement with them where I agree that if I didn't pay my payments, they can take me to a small magistrate eviction court and put me out of my real property? I'm going to submit to you absolutely not. I'm going to go further, Brother Youssef, and you're going to love this. And I wish I'd have known you back then when you're talking about Georgia. As you know, Georgia is a non-judicial state as well. So you'll go through Georgia, they'll do a non-judicial foreclosure, they'll get ahead in foreclosure, and they'll take you in magistrate court, summary court is what they're called, and they'll go for an eviction, right? And people will go in there arguing, well, you know, they offered me a modification, and they did all that other happy horse stuff. Let me say right quick about modifications. If you do a modification, you are absolutely not right. I'm going to put it that way. How can you modify? First of all, that's the first thing they're going to offer you is a modification. They're going to offer you a modification because as a debt collector, once you've re-aged is what that's called. And that's a legal terminology. Re-age that debt. Once you enter into any agreement, payment agreement, or anything with a debt collector, you have just waived everything, all your defenses, and you agree that you got an agreement with them. You sign one of their piece of papers, and you have already agreed that I owe you $200,000, and you know you're the title holder. You know you are party to that mortgage and that deed of trust and that security deed. And yeah, man, can we work something out? You're done. How are you going to modify something that's totally erroneous? You, that's the first thing they want to do, because once you fill out that piece of paper, they know you can't go back and then say, well, you're a debt collector. Well, I was a debt collector, but you didn't know that. You signed my modification papers. Now you've agreed with me. And let me tell you something. Most of those modification papers will have on there who? The servicer. It never mentions the lender. You will have a securitized. They'll tell you the REMIC, CWABS, 123456, mortgage-backed securities, ABC, 123, owns your mortgage, right? And you'll be like, okay, well, then they own the mortgage. That's a security. We'll get into that another time because I don't want to make it complex. I just try to give people remedy, and your remedy is in the FDCPA and the FCRA. You don't have to get it. I can get into securitization and blow your mind and talk way above your altitude, but I'm going to keep it real. When they identify that securitization trust as your lender, but then they send you modification paperwork, you will notice that it does not list the securitization REMIC in your modification. How are you going to modify with a servicer and they said that the REMIC trust owns it? Wouldn't they be in your paperwork? Wouldn't they be the lender or considered the creditor when you're modifying and you're making payments? That's the first indication that people just don't see. This modification paperwork says Bank of America, but you're saying it's my mortgage is owned by some securitization trust, which consists of investors in the CWABS 123ABC trust. Well, then why are they not mentioned in the modification? It seems like I am giving all my money and make an agreement with you as a servicer, and as a servicer, you don't have no authority, nor do you have any monetary interest in this transaction. Why are you doing a modification? Because you're giving them a brand new $200,000 note in debt, and now you can't assert these offenses that I'm giving you right now because you already agreed that you owe the debt. All right, but let's go into eviction in Atlanta. There is a law that I discovered along with another one of my side partners for Georgia, OCGA 4411-30. All right, so you go through eviction, and these courts is going to rubber stamp it, and they're going to be like, oh, we're going to give you eviction, and we're going to go ahead and let you get out of the property. You got 10 days to get out. Sheriff's going to come, and what you do is called a counter affidavit, okay? And I know you haven't heard of it because we're about the only ones that discovered it, okay? It's called a counter affidavit in Georgia, OCGA 4411-30 and 32. What that says is that, say the judge went on ahead and agreed with the bank, which he's probably going to do, and agreed that you should be evicted being a tenant when you're not a tenant. You could serve upon them a counter affidavit, and this is what it says, 441-11-30. Manner of ejecting intruders, affidavit, ejection by sheriff, counter affidavit. When any person, either by himself, his agent, or his attorney in fact, shall take and subscribe an affidavit in writing before any officer authorized to administer an oath setting forth that he claims in good faith the right of possession of the described land or tenement and that such land or tenement is in the hands of another named person who does not in good faith claim a right to such possession and yet refuses to abandon the same, it shall be the duty of the sheriff of the county where the land or tenement is located upon receiving such affidavit to exhibit such affidavit to the person described as being in possession of such land or tenement at the earliest possible day and to turn such person out of possession unless the person in possession tenders to the sheriff a counter affidavit stating that he claims in good a legal right to the possession of the land or the tenement. Now, brother,
okay,
Yusuf, I know you didn't have that one.
I'm going to say this. Okay. You've been flawlessly. You just tripped up on this one thing. And then I'm not the way what you just did. We have discovered this. We call it a sheriff affidavit. And I'm going to tell
okay.
you my experience in Henry County. When I had some clients who were getting ejected from a house. I took this out to the sheriff, and the sheriff was putting them out, and I tendered him this affidavit. And he handed it back. This is exactly what he told me. He handed it back. And he said, look, I'm going to tell you something. He said, the country might have been set up and operate that this way. We don't operate like that no more. We take our orders from rich and powerful people. That's why I left Georgia. because I gave him one of these sheriff affidavits, and he sat there, and this is Henry County. This is in Henry County now.
That's right.
I have been fighting, and I can bring the clients on and let you talk to them. I've been fighting with Henry County like 3 years. I've been keeping this one family in their home. And finally I've gotten to the point where I befriended an attorney, and I turned it over to him, and he lost the house in 2 months. All of 2 months. So paid him all this money, and that's why I don't like attorneys either. I don't trust these attorneys. But I gave him this affidavit, and this was in 2000, just so y'all how long I've known about this, like in 2011. I've been fighting foreclosures like 4 years. So I was in this real, real deep, and that's why I started this show, was because of foreclosures. But when that sheriff told me that, I really felt like that there wasn't any justice in the courts. You know, I couldn't find it. I was like, I've been on the news there like 2-3 times. Doors kicked in. I mean, last time they kicked in the door and pulled guns on me, and I was there by myself. Like 10 officers, all in white. And they sent the major. They sent the major at me and everything. Because I didn't went in court with this judge and basically let this judge, it's in Cobb County, and let this judge know that, hey, these people don't, I mean, the prosecutor didn't even say nothing. I sat there and got into a debate with this judge for about 45 minutes. And she told, and when I came in the door, she told me, Mr. Jones, I already made my decision. I said, whoa, let's get a court reporter in here. I'm like, you know, without a securitization audit that demonstrated that the name of the trust that they were foreclosing in, that loan wasn't even in the trust. They definitely didn't have it standing. I got the evidence. Before she let me present my evidence, she said, I already made my decision. So then I got so pissed, I had four oath of office and bond on the record. And she went off record and threatened me. Next week, Monday, they kicked in the door and for an eviction, pulled guns on me. I asked them for a court order, and they told me, we aren't showing you nothing. And that's why, hell, I got out of Georgia, because I'm like, I'm seeing it on some gangster type. I had banks calling me up, you know, on the phone talking about, let me tell you something, man, you fucking with the wrong thing. You know, and I was doing, you know, that's why I first got into it, but that's why I kind of left, because I felt like they are not operating by any rules. I feel like they're just stealing. And I don't know what's going on. I just feel like they're on some straight-up theft type stuff.
I can tell you what's going on, brother. Yeah, I can tell you what's going on. You're absolutely right about what you said. And that was back then. That's how it was. Well, let me tell you what we do. See, I make moves. I don't talk. We met with three sheriffs down here, Henry County, Cobb County, Fulton County. One of the sheriffs I know good, okay? And we said, look, 18 of us, 18 of us say, look, sheriff, we got this law on the books, and they're not being enforced. We had this fraud going on in the county recorders. We went to them professionals, paralegals, homeowners, lawyers, okay, not attorneys. We went there and we said, now, we need you to start enforcing this law. It is law, it is clear, and it is on the books. So let me tell you what happened. The sheriffs got together. Let me just say this. These sheriffs, and I help many of them. I deal with a lot of law enforcement individuals. They're going through foreclosure, too. So trust me, when they're provided with law that it helps us, it helps them. And I explain that to them. I help a lot of them, Brother Youssef. So we told the sheriff, you need to start enforcing the law, or we're going to, under OCGA 3633-4, we're going to start bringing some claims against you. Okay, in your official capacity for failure to execute the law. Now, the sheriffs went back, and let me tell you, 12, Brother Youssef, in the last 37 days, I stopped 12 evictions with the counter affidavit. Because you know why? If I got a problem, I'll give you an example. 2 weeks ago, I had a problem. They was evicting, brother. I helped them, got him the counter affidavit, drafted it up nicely. It looks professional. Your stuff got to look clean. You know, it looks professional, a paralegal, so I made it look nice. We executed it. I took him down to the sheriff's department. gave it to the sheriff, and this is Henry County. So I know what you're talking about. Well, the marshals handled the eviction, and the marshal was like, well, I don't know what that is. That's okay. Well, you got instructions right there, and you can take it down to the court, Superior Court. She'll know what to do. Because what happens is when you serve that sheriff with that counter affidavit, you can do it before they even come out to the house. You serve it upon him. He has to take it. He physically has to take it to the clerk of the court and give it to the Superior Court and set for trial. Okay, set a hearing for trial by a jury. Let me make you understand how important that is. Y'all know we don't get jury trials on these mortgage foreclosure matters. You know that the courts, I don't care if they're federal judges or state judges, they're the gatekeepers and the gate protectors of our jury. We know that. We know that. That's criminal and civil. We know they don't want us to get before a jury, or if we go before a jury, they're tampering with the jury or giving the jury instructions. Jury nullification is what we got to understand. But our system was never set up that way. It was set up for the jury to decide everything, because we're never on trial. The law is always on trial. But at any rate, this provision, which is a counter affidavit, sets it up that you must get a jury trial, not a crooked judge, not a commissioner attorney acting as a commissioner or acting as a judge. There's a jury trial. Isn't that what we always wanted? This law provides for that. So anyway, back to the story. I called the sheriff that I knew. I said, listen, I got this marshal over here, and he's not, you know, I know y'all spread the word, because the sheriff started getting together and started having training on it. Do you understand what I'm saying? And I'll give you the information offline. So I didn't have a training on it. Say, listen, when y'all get one of these, y'all got to do what y'all got to do, or you can be sued for not doing it. So I called this sheriff. This sheriff said, you know what, Brother Sharif, I'll give him a call. He called that other marshal and the sheriff. He said, listen, I'm not going to tell you what to do, because that's not my county, but I'm going to tell you what we're doing over here in Fulton in Cobb County. If you get one of those, it would not be good for you not to do what you're supposed to do. And that's all I'm going to say. They called the gentleman back that I was helping, and they said, we filed your counter affidavit. And they were supposed to evict him the next day. He ain't been evicted, and that was a week ago. So when I say 12 and 37 days, I'm telling you that it works, because you have to make noise about the law, and you have to hold these public officials accountable to say that this is a law that's on the book, and it gives – I just read it to you. It gives you clear directions on what you're supposed to do. As soon as that sheriff shows up, here you go. Here's a counter affidavit, so I'm sure you know what to do by that. You need to go ahead and file that. Take it to the court. Do not conduct an injectment, and take it to the court and set a hearing. Okay, I'm waiting on these hearings. There's 12 of them. I'm waiting on the jury trials. We're happily ready to engage on a jury trial about title of these issues. And let me tell you something. You get me 6 people or 12 people that I know, all of which probably incurred some type of foreclosure or some type of threat of foreclosure, and I'm telling you, Georgia's landscape is going to change. Okay, because if we start getting jury trials on these issues, it is over.
I was the one that discovered the affidavit of forgery, which is OCGA 44223.
Yes, sir.
I read a case in Georgia, Higana versus HSBC, and it was an appellate court decision where if somebody wanted to challenge the deed of trust, they had to put it in an affidavit of forgery. Do you know that they rescinded 44223 at the beginning of this year, OCGA 44223? And it was talking about a recorded deed shall be admitted in evidence in any court without further proof unless the maker of the deed, one of its heirs, or the opposite party in the action files an affidavit that the deed is a forgery to the best of his knowledge and belief. Upon the filing of the affidavit, the genuineness of the alleged deed shall become an issue to be determined in the action. And it also got some citations. And if an affidavit of forgery be filed in an injectment suit, as provided for by the code, deed cannot be read as evidence until an issue to have its genuineness be tried. So they had codes for that. Then they had a code, OCGA 24527, which is the evidence code, which talks about a certified copy of a deed or other instrument affecting real property, which has been properly recorded in the office of the clerk of the Superior Court of the county or counties in which said property is situated, shall be admissible in evidence under the same rules
which would apply to the original without the necessity of accounting for the original instrument. Now, they got a code that allows them to bring in these spurious deeds, and that's OCGA 24527. Now, they do have a code that qualifies that at OCGA 24525, which is one of my favorites, where it says the existence of a genuine original is essential to the admissibility of a copy. The amount of evidence to show such existence must vary with the circumstances of each case. Where no direct issue is made upon the facts, lack evidence shall be sufficient. And the key thing right there was direct issue. They're getting away. They can proffer a copy of a deed if you don't object to it.
That's
and that's
right.
Where you have to learn how to object to it. And all these codes, you know, I gave to people, and trust me, I used to mule over these codes and everything, and it just seemed like in Georgia, man, that they were just, I just saw corruption. And maybe it's changed, because that's a nice move, which I did. You went to the sheriff's. And
oh, yeah.
That's what you were supposed, because that code, what you just read about the sheriff's affidavit, it was hidden. You know, the sheriff didn't even have that in
that's
their
right.
book.
That's right. That's right. Well, you know that's by design. You know that's by design,
yeah,
brother. You said, look, they'll put all the laws in there as far as taking your property, but they're going to hide the law in code. Rather, they put it in statute or they put it in very high legal lease terminology. They're going to hide the true essence of the law. See, we brought it forward. Not only that, brother, you said, I wish you'd come back to Georgia, man, because you can begin your start again, and along with us, we'll show you how to get it done. We're getting it done. You understand? We got the politicians involved. We got law enforcement involved. I help these law enforcement officers keep their houses there. They're going through foreclosure. They're going through all these type of situations as well. They really don't want to be evicting people. I'm telling you that. They take orders because in a way they're trained to do so. So if you come back down here now, you'll see a different culture. We had investigations going on with these foreclosure mills, the three down here, McCurdy and Candler, a couple other ones I won't name. We got criminal investigations going on. We got the sheriff showing up testifying in four, because that there are investigations going on between. Things are changing, and in order, that's why I get tired of us talking and arguing and bickering. Use your power. Use your voice. Use your status, if you may, and begin executing and doing things and stop talking about doing things. We're doing things. We're stopping foreclosures. We're suing attorneys. Wow. We're suing judges if we have to. We're bringing the law. We said, if you don't execute the law, listen, it's enough of us. You understand? When I said we went to the sheriff, we were 18 strong. And it wasn't 18 pookies. It was 18 people that were knowledgeable about the law, that had experience in this particular arena, and, in fact, two attorneys who also say that. Now, I have a thing for attorneys as a society. As a society, I think they're very corrupt. But there are attorneys, some within my family, mind you, that are good attorneys that has a problem with the way the system is functioning now. They're very frustrated. I get a lot. I've worked with attorneys for 7 years. I know how they think. They're not that smart. They're very process intelligent. But when it comes to putting together strategies and things of that nature, that's what I was hired for with them to do. Well, how would you do this, Mr. Roberto? What I would do is do this. I would go ahead and bring the action here. I would do some venue shopping. I would take it up to New York, and then I would do that, and then I'll get a restraining order. Then you see what I mean? That's what you have to do. Everything is strategy, Brother Yusuf. You say that all the time. You just can't
right.
go blabbing your mouth or sitting. You got to think about how am I going to – it looks easy. Look, what I do is look at a case, and I'll be like, okay, that's easy right there. But I want to get another $100,000 out of this attorney for sending this letter. Because if I didn't say so, attorneys are debt collectors. Let me just be clear with you. And let me be clear about something else. They're the low-hanging fruit. Because 100% of the time, it is them that's pursuing the action. It's not the bank. The bank hands it to the legal wizards, and the legal wizards, you know, go in the lab and they scrape up, and they put some, you know, lettuce, tomatoes in there, some hot sauce, and they try to come up with a good little meal that the judge will eat. But all of it is hearsay. All of it is a bunch of nonsense. If an attorney writes a pleading trying to sue on a foreclosure, the first thing I'm doing is counter-sue him against the attorney, because the bottom of that complaint where he stated all those alleged facts, he didn't have anybody down the bottom that says, well, you know, my client Bank of America stated, Angela Thompson stated that this, that, and that occurred. No, they'd be like, well, on this particular day, you know, Mr. Youssef got a mortgage, he executed it, and it's filed in the county recorder, and he didn't make payments, and he's in default, he owes $200,000. I'm asking, well, who said that? I'm looking at this complaint, Judge, and who said that? The attorney said that. Can the attorney testify or provide any facts to this court? Is that not considered hearsay? Yes, that is hearsay. Then, Judge, we're wasting our time. I move for immediate dismissal with prejudice. We don't have time to play games. I'm not going to file 10 motions. I'm not going to do it. That's billable hours for the attorney. Ms. Attorney, unless you got a plaintiff in here, first of all, you got to come to the court. And another thing I tell people quite simply, and I want to say this, stop allowing the people to communicate with you or let inapposite objects communicate with you and you take it as true. People will say, Bank of America sent me a letter saying they were going to foreclose. Well, who from Bank of America? Well, Bank of America. Well, let me tell you something. Stop being silly. Bank of America don't talk. That's an artificial entity. That's ink and paper. Who from Bank of America said this so you'll have somebody to sue? Natural people can only require you to do something. You telling me Bank of America said something is like telling me that table's talking to you. Who said that? Okay? Who said it? Not Bank of America. Well, Bank of America. Wait a minute, Bank of America. Listen, I'll give you $100,000 if you bring Bank of America ass in here and let that motherfucker talk. Excuse me. Ain't nobody talking. Somebody said that. I need to know who's responsible. When you send me a letter, it better be a name on it. It better not say the collection department or the foreclosure department or loss mitigation department. Who the hell is that? Somebody wrote that goddamn letter. I need to know who said that, so if I got to sue, I got to bring this lady in, Amy Bilkersberg. I'm going to subpoena your ass to come in here and say, did you send me that letter? Your name is on it. Can you tell me what firsthand information you got to send me a letter saying I owe somebody some damn money or I owe a debt? What personal first-hand information do you have about this transaction that was 10 years ago? Were you there? No. Oh, okay, so you violate the law. I'm going to hold you liable. I'm going to hold a person liable.
And you know, OCGA 24925, OCGA-9-24925, I always use that. No attorney shall be competent or compellable to testify for or against his client to any matter or thing, the knowledge of which he may have acquired from his client by virtue of his employment as attorney or by reason of the anticipated employment of him as attorney. However, an attorney shall be both competent and compellable to testify for or against his client as to the matter or thing, the knowledge of which he may have acquired in any other manner. So in other words, this right here is telling you that they can't testify just because they got hired to do something.
Hey, Islam, and that was perfect. That was perfect. And when I tell people to go in court, all you got to do is listen. You can imagine what happens when I go in court. These jokers be shivering. Their face is red. The judge is red. I'm just like, listen, this guy's not able to. He's not able to talk in court with me or any of my clients. I'm not even having that. Listen, we're not doing soap operas up in here. Do you have any facts? And if you are, let's go on and get you sworn in so I can cross-examine you to see what kind of personal first-hand knowledge you have. This statement
exactly.
And complaint was written by you. It's not corroborated or supported by any affidavit or declaration from a first-hand knowledgeable witness. So you just said that, attorney. Bank of America didn't say shit because they can't talk. So who said that? You said it. That complaint, and you also have to watch for when attorney usually respond to a complaint or a motion. They will always put statement of facts. See, there's always, and you talk about it, Youssef, there's always subliminal symbols and messages and statements that they use. This is an art, and you really have to study it, because when they write statement of facts, what are they saying? These are the facts. You can't issue. Now, I move that the court strike that complaint, that answer, or that motion pursuant to the rules of civil procedure, because this attorney can't state any facts in this case unless he's willing to be cross-examined and testify to the veracity of the statements made therein. So what do you mean statement of facts? You can't offer no facts. The only person in the courtroom today that's a competent fact witness is me. What I'm saying is that I sent a $50,000 check and paid this mortgage off 10 years ago. Prove that I didn't. Well, do you have proof that you did? I'm not the plaintiff. I don't have to prove anything. I can just state it. You have to prove that I didn't. How can you prove that I didn't? Well, that mortgage lender that was on that document is dead. Is he going to talk? Are they coming to court? They dead. So it's my word against yours, right? You're saying I did something. I'm saying I didn't. Who's going to win? Hearsay loses. Facts win.
I did that in Clayton County. I had an attorney. The attorney, all he did, he didn't file no evidence. All he did was file a dispossessory. Nothing with it. No document, nothing. And I showed up every time he tried to talk, I said, objection out of hearsay. He said, well, yeah, objection out of hearsay. Objection out of hearsay. Every time he tried to talk, I would just say, I wouldn't even let him talk. And then he looked at judge for help, and then the judge looked at him and said, he can do that. He should.
There you go.
And then the judge said, y'all both come back with your witnesses. Because he don't have no witnesses.
Thank you.
He don't have,
thank you.
And so he don't have a first-hand knowledge of anything. As soon as they try to hand in an unlawful detainer or dispossessory, they come in there with those documents. As soon as he tries to hand those judge, and I did this on TV. I was on television. They put me on channel 2. Jody Fleischer was trying to make me with those sovereign citizens down there. And they brought the television cameras into court because they're trying to say I'm stealing the houses and all this type of stuff.
Uh-huh.
So I came in, and I told them, I tell you what, I said, bring your cameras down to the courthouse, and I'm going to be in Judge Livingston's courtroom at 4 o'clock. You know, Livingston down there in Fulton County, you know. And went up in there. She brought the cameras. First thing came out of his mouth, I said, objection out of hearsay, we need someone who can testify to the veracity and validity of the contents of those documents. And everybody just froze. And he was like, well, and you know, if a judge doesn't answer your objection, that's called an equivocation. So then you
that's
come
right.
back and you say, I take exception to the honorable judge's refusal to rule on my objection. Would you please enter sustain or overrule into the record so I can preserve the error? Because you want to preserve
perfect.
The error because that's irreversible error. That's reversible error when he allows hearsay evidence on the record.
That's right.
He
and it is not excusable neglect.
On the
that's right. That's right. So I tell people all the time with attorneys. That's right. So I tell people all the time, what's the tool of an attorney? What is his tool? Not what, he, what is his tool? His tool is mouth. Deceptive mouth. That's what I call it. So when you shut him up, I don't let them jokers talk. I let them enter their appearance for the record. I let them, you know, state who they is. They say, well, I'm here for the plaintiff. Where's the plaintiff? Who's here for the plaintiff, Judge? Say for the record appearances of everybody in the room. Who's here? Oh, well, the plaintiff is not here. I move for immediate dismissal. Well, I'm not going to dismiss that. He can talk for the plaintiff. I don't know if he's here for the plaintiff. Let me tell you something. In Ohio, there was a case with some attorneys that was doing foreclosures. And they were doing foreclosures in the bank name, Wells Fargo, Bank of America, you name it. They were finding properties that was abandoned, and they were go ahead and doing the foreclosures.
Yeah.
And they were doing
yeah.
like a $200,000 house. You remember that? They were doing a $200,000 house,
yeah.
and the assessor noticed that they were selling it for $30,000. You see what I mean? The banks didn't even know they were doing that. So when I come into court, I always say, I need proof of agency. I need proof that he is actually representing the bank because, first of all, the bank is not here. There's not anyone standing in from the bank. He has no witnesses here today. He's just here by himself. He's not going to be allowed to do too much talking, Judge. I'm going to tell you in advance because hearsay testimony is not going to be allowed. So what is he going to provide today? Is he here as a witness or is he here as an attorney? If he's here as an attorney, we need somebody here from the bank, you know, to corroborate any statements he may make, I'm just telling you in advance, if you want to do a continuation and postpone until he's able to bring somebody here, fine. If you let him go forward now, I'm telling you, I'm going to move for dismissal. And I'm going to move for it every time he opens his mouth because he can't state any facts. And he can't go up against me because I am the only party in this courtroom that can state any facts about this transaction that happened 10 years ago, 5 years ago, 3 years ago. Is that right, Judge? Okay, so we understand that. Now, what does he have to say? And he can't say anything, nothing. And you know what? For the sake of argument, Judge, I'll move for a continuation and give him an opportunity to bring somebody because I know as a debt collector, he can't prove anything. The lender is dead. The lender's gone. They're dissolved. They've been out of business years ago. The only thing that you have is some stolen records and documents you might have got from their computer or they may have gave you, but you think that represents $200,000 of real property? I think not. You think that assignment that you typed up that's poorly written, poorly drafted, don't make any sense, ambiguous, void, you think that's going to represent you taking my $200,000 property? You're a joke, and I'm going to show you you're a joke. And any judge that disagrees with me, I got something for you, too. because you only can judge the facts. That's it, just the facts. That's the only thing applicable in court is the facts. So that's my take on how to handle an attorney. They're fancy. Listen, the judge allows them to argue amongst each other because there's a client that's paying for that show. But when you're dealing with pro se litigants and you're dealing with people that's acting in their proper person, you don't have time for those arguments, because if you let them argue long enough, they're going to lose you somewhere in the weeds with all those, with all that legalese and all these little case laws where you got 50 judges saying one thing and 50 judges saying the total opposite. That just shows you you're not dealing with a doggone people with common sense, much less the court. The law is the law. It's just black and white. So how does 50 judges say, okay, Mercer's good, and then 50 of them say, no, they're not? Something wrong with y'all. Let me tell you something. Mercer has no standing. Mercer at all. I mean, and what people don't know is there's a difference in Mercer and Mercer Corp. People always don't know the difference. Just like there's a difference in BAC Home Loans and Bank of America. Many times you'll have a loan by Bank of America, and then BAC Home Loans is doing the foreclosure. Well, people don't read and look and be like, okay, Judge, well, tell me, listen, this says Bank of America, N.A., and BAC Home Loans is suing me. Aren't they different agencies? Kill the case right there. You're not the proper party. Only Bank of America, N.A. can execute this type of action. So those little things fly over our head, and you get one of these crooked attorneys, they ain't going to tell you. And you hire them, I'm going to tell you right now, you ain't getting nowhere. You better start learning law for yourself and stop depending on these jackleg attorneys to be trying to do everything for you, because if you don't know more than them, then how do you know what they're doing is proper? They're not. They're going to preach to you a modification. Do a modification. Man, they're going to lower your payment. Well, isn't it easy to lower your payments, man, if I don't have any interest in that loan and I got a 10-cent assignment filed in the county that costs $5 to file, and I'm going to sit up there and I'm going to do a modification on $200,000 and let you give me a note for $200,000. Now you just made me $200,000 rich when I didn't have probably not even a grand in the whole fraudulent transaction. What are you doing a modification for? Because they're going to drop your payments. They can drop it down to $100 because they don't have any money in it. They're going to make it look good to you because they want you to sign off and waive all your rights. Read your modification agreements and tell me if it ain't 10 paragraphs in there, they say you waive this, you waive that, you waive all defenses, you waive all future action, you waive all litigation, you waive the fact that we're not the lender. You agree that we are the lender, that we can receive payments based on this modification. Read it. It's the biggest fraud in the world. You have collection companies now that are booming. They were little debt collectors collecting defaulted cell phone bills and electric bills, $200, $300. Now they're mortgage servicers, allegedly. Now they're big debt collecting companies. They're sending you notices on a mortgage talking about we got foreclosed, but their paperwork is still horrible. Their letters don't look like lender letters. You know lender statements. They're very professional. They have million-dollar programs that draft up these statements and make them look good, your interest rate, your payment, everything. You get these letters now from these debt collectors, I don't know how you give them $20. The paperwork is horrible. My 14-year-old can draft up a better statement than that. Why are they, do they look like that? Because as much as they try to say they're creditors and they're lenders, they're merely debt collectors. And debt collectors have a least sophisticated system that they spit out letters, and it's going to look like a debt collector letter. It's going to look horrible. It's not going to mention anything of substance, and you're going to turn around and call and be like, yeah, can you work out something on my mortgage? Sure we can. Sure we can. If I didn't have the love and the spirit that you have, Brother Youssef, with the amount of disinformation and the lack of information our people have, I would have opened up a debt collection agency long time ago. I struggled with it a long time ago. I'm just like, why people don't read? Why do our people not read and understand? Why do we keep just giving these people our properties, our real property? Why? But I'm not built like that, so I'm going to continue to try to help our people.
You know that debt collectors, 80% of all third-party debt collections are because people don't answer. That's why it's so lucrative.
Mm-hmm.
Third-party, I saw that number, third-party, that's why they get most of their money. Third-party debt collectors make most of their money because 80% of the people default on responding. They don't come to court.
That's right.
They don't want the letters to come to them in the mail. They don't do anything. One time they contact me is when they get a letter saying that they're getting their check garnished. That's when they contact me. man.
Oh, yeah.
I got somebody garnishing my check, man. What'd I do? I'm like, okay, well, I mean, if he has to garnish me, he already got a judgment. He sent you letters. Now he's going back to get a garnishment and everything. I mean, where have you been? You just been ignoring
right.
it? You thought it was just going to go away?
That's right. Where were you? How many letters they got to send to you before you take it serious? Because before you even get to the point of foreclosure, they done sent you about 20 doggone notices. Before you get to the point of eviction, they done sent you some letters. When are you going to take one of those letters seriously and do some reading and research and determine who's talking to you? If I was a knock on your door today, Yusef, and you didn't know me, and I knock on your door, like, who is it? I'd be like, Pookie. I don't know no goddamn Pookie. Who are you? Where are you from? How do I know you? Before you even open the door. Well, we'll let somebody send us a letter talking about you owe us $200,000 based on your mortgage. We're like, oh, yeah, well, you know, I did. I did not make the payments without, you know, y'all let me stay a year, so I'm going to go on and go. You follow what I mean? I mean, are you serious? Are you serious? You're going to give up your, now they got abandonment, so they can take your property because you abandoned. And let me tell you something, Brother Yusef. It is many times these attorneys and the banks will send you those notices to see if you will run. Because I don't know how many clients I've helped, and they send out those notices, we're going to evict you on Monday. I'd be like, look, I'm here. Come on. You follow what I'm saying? Until you do it, and when you do it, now I have actual damages. You understand what I mean? I have actual damages once you've done it. Come on and do it. You understand? Don't talk about it. Be about it. Let's go, baby.
Let's go to the phones, man. There's a lot of people with their hands up. let me start it up. Let me start in Florida real quick. Oh, and before we do that, man, give the people your contact information because I'm sure it's a lot of people that want to contact. You got a business phone, anything, you give whatever you want. Go ahead and give these people
sure,
your contact information.
Sure, contact. I'll give them an email address. You can reach me at thelawmaster, thelawmaster44 at yahoo.com. So it's thelawmaster at thelawmaster44. At yahoo.com.
That's great. All right, let's go to the phone lines. We open it up the lines for questioning and answer. Number 424-222-5250. You're listening to High Frequency Radio. I'm gonna start in Georgia. Somebody since that's your home spot, we'll start in Georgia. 444-1552, Georgia. You're on High Frequency Radio. Georgia.
Yes, I'm here. Okay, hi.
Okay.
I live in DeKalb County. Can you hear me?
Okay. Yes, we can hear you.
Okay. I live in DeKalb County, and, you know, I hear that you worked out something with Henry County, Fulton, and Cobb. What have you found in DeKalb County as far as this?
DeKalb is the same. It's just this information, sister, and blessings to you, this information is going through our all sheriff's department, and I don't think you're going to have a problem in any county. You just have to, look, you have to execute. You have to have that affidavit. You need to serve it upon the sheriff. Don't wait until you're evicted. When you have that eviction, first of all, do not miss any opportunity to challenge that. You challenge it from every level. They send you a notice of intent to foreclose or power sale, then you need to attack right then. And then you have another level of attack. Well, say they did the foreclosure, now you're in eviction court. You'd be like, well, prove I'm a tenant.
Well,
and who's the landlord here? And then if that all fails, then you go ahead and do your counter affidavit, and you serve it. You get you a process server. Do not be cheap. You're dealing with hundreds of thousands of dollars in real property. Stop thinking you can throw pennies at it. Get you a process server, have your affidavit drawn up professionally, serve it upon the sheriff by process server, and be like, here, before you even come out, don't even come. Go ahead and take that to the Kirk Superior Court, file that, and I'll be looking forward to a hearing date for trial. And that's it. Post one on your door just in case they didn't come, but now you have a process server that shows that they were served timely, and then you have your trial in court. Now, let me say this. When I give remedy to people, I tell you, I'm not going to give you everything because we're too spoiled in this day and age where Brother Yusef and other people, we give y'all so much that y'all looking for answers, but you have to be able to stand on that answer when challenged. That means you might have to go deep into why that answer is what it is. So I don't give people the answers, everything. So we're always looking for solutions. We don't want to study. We don't want to open a book. We don't want to read. I've given you the law. It's quite simple. You can read it and draft your document appropriately, and then your eviction should not occur. That is the law. But you have to study and you have to read, and you have to be prepared that if you were, if for people that go to church, to do your Easter speech in front of the judge, they did a non-judicial foreclosure. I can't control that. They did it at an attorney's office. They did it at the courthouse. I told them don't do it. I asked them to identify themselves. They're not creditors. They're not mortgagers. They're not lenders. So I have no control that they wanted to commit this act. But I'm still in my home, and now they're bringing me to some summary court on an eviction, and I'm not a tenant. I have title in my name. Therefore, you can do one or two things. If you do issue an order, I'm going to appeal that order, okay? And also, I'm going to provide this counter affidavit for you right here in the court because I know I'm prepared. I know you're probably going to enter an order. So I'm going to serve it upon you right now and that sheriff that's in the room to tell you don't even waste your gas. Save the county's money. Don't come out. Just take it right there to the clerk of court, and she'll know what to do with it.
Okay.
Are you in foreclosure or are you in eviction?
Well, I don't know whether I'm in foreclosure. They're saying that they foreclosed, and I've already gone to magistrate court once. I filed a removal to federal, and they're trying to bounce it back, so I have to file my answer.
Yeah, they're going to bounce it back. You can't remove to federal in an eviction case. You have to do you have to start you some title action in the superior court and do a motion to consolidate those cases and say, Judge, you can't hear anything pertaining to or pursuant to an eviction. I have a current case pending that relates to title. So if you would make any kind of ruling, it would be adverse to my action that's pending. And as simple as that.
Okay.
If you remove the federal, it's not a federal question dealing with eviction. You have to do a counterclaim, and you may have some federal claims in there.
Okay. So I have to start a title action in the superior court?
That's right. Or this is what I would do.
Let me speak on that real quick, because if you look at the state court bench book, he's absolutely right. If you have a title action, they are supposed to remove it from state court and put it in a superior court. But a lot of times they don't do that. They wouldn't do that. I found that information out from reading the state court bench book of Georgia. It has it in there. It directs the magistrate judge what to do, because, you know, that's the instructions for the judge in a foreclosure telling them what to do. If you really want to know about dispossessories, read the state court bench book. It got everything. Even when the judge comes out and gives you the speech, that's in the state court bench book. They are administrators. They have to do whatever is in that code book tells them what to do, and it's right there in the state court bench book, and it tells them that if you have an action over title, that they have to remove it over in the superior court. They don't do it.
That's right. And let me tell you why they don't do it. Why they don't do it, Brother Youssef, is one, because they don't do it because we're not proactive, one. If we know we got a foreclosure, what are you waiting on them to serve you with an eviction? Why don't you go ahead and start your action now, and you can do it both because, you know, the federal court has concurrent jurisdiction over state tort claims. So you're going to file your action under FDCPA, the FCRA, your Consumer OCGA, Deceptive Practices Act, and you're going to do a quiet title in there. That's what you want to do, and you're going to bring that all in the federal court. Okay, and then if you do that many times, they won't file an eviction because they know, these attorneys know, that you got a pending action open. This is why I tell people when you stop foreclosure, you need to sue. When you sue, don't even talk about the house. When you come in under FDCPA, it's just about, Judge, they're a debt collector. And as the example that I gave you, if I charge up my American Express, they can't come get that couch I bought, right? So they can't come get this property. It's real property. But if they wanted to, 1692I determines how they should do that. So how do they do a non-judicial foreclosure and is determined that they're a debt collector when the FDCPA 1692I say they can't, they got to bring it judicially. And you should murder them judicially in any judicial foreclosure. Ohio. I got so bored with Ohio stopping foreclosure, it was just easy. I'm just like, let these jokers have to bring an action to me. And I'm the defendant. I mean, it's easy work. Like Mayweather say, it's easy work because can't no debt collector beat me on anything because they don't have any facts. So let them bring it judicially.
And I haven't gotten anything. The debt collector is not bringing any action against me. It's Fannie Mae at this point who's saying that they own the house.
Okay, let me tell you about Fannie Mae. Fannie Mae. All right. I can go on and on about Fannie Mae. But Fannie Mae doesn't own anything. Fannie Mae guaranteed loan. They're sort of like the insured. Okay, Fannie Mae can never own anything. Neither can the banks. Banks don't own any property. I mean, they're forbidden from it. They can't own any property. They're going to say that they owe. This is why I tell people all the time, when you're dealing with statutes, whether civilly or criminally, just find you something in there that doesn't make any sense or that is inaccurate and stand on it. Like, they sent me this note, they said I owe them money. Well, what are they – this is USET's favorite title. Well, you owe the money. This is what attorneys will say. Well, you got the loan. You owe the money. Money? You didn't say that. Money? What money? What money? Define money. Give me your definition of money. What money did you owe me? I don't know if I got any money. Prove the money trail and show me that I got money. See, and when they open up their mouth, which they will do, you got to put your foot in it, and you got to keep it in there so they don't talk no more. Once they make one mistake with me, it is over. You said money? You said loan? What loan? Prove a loan. Well, it says that, and this is another thing you have to understand. They will use tricky language like the borrower is in default. You'll see that a lot in their pleading.
Uh-huh.
They never say the loan is in default because the loan is in a securitization trust, and that's being paid some of the times. The services have to pay those loans. So they'll never say the loan is in default. They'll say the borrower is in default. What do you mean the borrower is in default? You said I got a loan, so how am I going to be in default? Is the loan in default? No, if you pull up the securitization trust, you will see that it's either being paid or not even due. So what do you mean the borrower is in default? I'm not in no default. What are you talking about? Who? Who you get that from? And then they'll use words like investor. And when you speak of Fannie Mae, they'll say the investor of your loan is Fannie Mae. I'm going to ask you one simple question. Go through your mortgage deed, your deed of trust, your security instrument, and find me one time that investor is mentioned within the four corners of that contract. An investor is a debt collector. I've never heard of none of your paperwork. I don't care. It's from truth and lending statements all the way up. You will never see the word investor. You see how that language changes the dynamics of the communication? What do you mean, investor? Can you explain to me what an investor is? Because I see mortgager, I see creditor, I see lender, and I may see servicer, but I don't see investor. Or you're a debt collector and you pulled your money together and y'all invested in some defaulted debt. That's what it sounds like to me. That is what it is. You're an investor. You're a debt collector. Got you. Thanks for identifying yourself. You follow me?
Yes, I'm following.
Okay. Hopefully that helped. Do some studying and be proactive. Don't be reactive. When they send you that letter talking about they're going to default, take them in small claims court if you got $105. If you got $350, go ahead and file in the federal court if you're proficient in the federal rules of civil procedure. And if you know how to draft a complaint, you know how to answer motions, and you know how to do a Rule 26 hearing, you have to study is what I tell people. You can't just be willy-nilly and jump out there. You got to study. But let me say this. The FDCPA is 20-something pages, and about 10 of them is just really just a bunch of hogwash. You just got to focus on 1692, A all the way through H. Okay, that's it. FCRA is a little bit longer, but that's about your credit reporting. Okay, because many times you'll see that your credit report will identify a different creditor than the people that's coming out after you. What is that? That's evidence. Judge, they're saying they own this, but they're reporting to my credit report, my consumer report, that so-and-so owns the loan or that it was charged off or that it's a zero balance. You follow what I'm saying? Or you follow what I'm saying? So what is that?
Yep.
That's admissible evidence that you can put into your case that, I got a problem with the identity of these people, and you know, I got my credit report saying, and now what are they going to do?
Yeah.
They're gonna lean towards saying, well, we're over here, but then now you set them up for an FCRA complaint, which is every month that they're in your credit report is $1,000 per account per bureau. You see what I mean? It just goes on and on.
Yeah. That's interesting because the mortgage company is the one saying, the servicer is saying it has put something on my credit report regarding the foreclosure, but the loan is owned by a completely different entity.
Sure. So what's the simple question you would ask and you would go to the lender. You would try to call up the lender, Citibank, right, as the example I use, right? And you'd be like, Citibank, just simply, do this with a debt collector, you know, ABC collection company, send you a letter. And you had a card, you had a credit card with Chase. I would call up Chase, and it's a simple question I would ask. Do I owe you any money? Well, you owe Chase Manhattan for a credit card. No, I'm asking you a simple question. Do I owe you any money?
Right.
I just want you to put that in writing and send it to me. They will never say that to you. You don't owe them anything.
Right.
And if the original creditor charged it off and got on their profit and losses and got a tax credit for that loss, which Brother Youssef would know about business, you can write off things. You're going to write off bad debt, and you're going to get a credit for that. So do I owe you any money? No. Okay, well, I talked to the alleged original creditor, and they said I don't owe them anything. It was sold to a debt collection company. So if I can't pay the original creditor, why would I pay you?
Right. Okay.
Hopefully that helps.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Move right along. We'll go to Florida real quick. 561 area code, Florida. You're on high frequency radio.
Hi. Can you hear me?
We can.
Hi, can you hear me? Okay. Hi. I really wanted to attend that Gene Keating workshop, but I got sick over the weekend. My daughter and I were nauseous. But this has been a great class, and I just wanted to mention a few things. You know, when you first mentioned about the very start of the show, I think it's about people just having faith in the truth and their abilities to recognize the truth. And also recognize that their ancestors are leading them towards the truth, that a lot of times I'll just wake up in the middle of the night and go and listen to Youssef's show or True Freeman's show, and I'll get the answer that I had the question of the night before. And so I think sometimes it's just we have to kind of break out of the Stockholm syndrome and start having faith because it's been broken down. And then one other thing I was going to say, too, as far as the system changing and improving, it's about – I heard one story about Meket women or African women. There was a revolution going on where they were killing a lot of people, and that the women stopped a lot of the killing by coming out and just taking their clothes off and saying, here I am. If you're going to do something, here I am. And that it shamed the people, it shamed the men that were running around, you know, raping and killing so bad that it brought about peace in the community. And so I think that, you know, telling the truth about what really happened is going to be the answer to our remedy of just putting it out there and people waking up and not putting these judges that are taking people's homes and these attorneys that are taking people's homes and taking them off their pedestal and not putting them up to this level of respect that they don't deserve. But I had some questions about foreclosure because that's what I went through. You guys have a lot more information about the law than I do because when I went through my foreclosure, I had to do a lot of work in really learning about nutrition because I was so sick. I just had to get knee-deep in that. And so I went through a foreclosure, but I never went to the court. I was actually at a conference. I mentioned this before, but I was at a conference at the time that they came and they I say they actually burglarized the home because the person that's in the home now, his brother-in-law is a sheriff, and I believe that they put the right person in the home to be able to defend the home because they knew that they were fraudulently taking the home because they didn't have standing because I never, you know, appeared in court and said this, that, and the other. And, in fact, I provided them with paperwork saying that the debt was already paid. So I'm at the point now to where I'm trying to reverse the foreclosure, and I've provided – Bank of America, the CEO, the chairman, the governor, the sheriff's department, notice of the fraudulent foreclosure. And what I've noticed in the public records, what I'm seeing is that when you actually go into some detail into the tax recorder's office, it shows where my sale of my home was a verified sale, whereas the FHA sale to the trespasser is a disqualified sale. So, and that this was done by a review of the deed by the state of Florida. And what I believe is going on is it was also David James Stern was a part of this, which he's considered the foreclosure king down here in Florida because he was,
I'm aware.
You know,
as a matter of fact, I seen his house when I was on a boat ride on a little water taxi. And
yeah.
He has a brother Yusef, are you talking about a mansion on the water, brother? It's $20 million? I mean, it's some TV stuff. But let me
well,
say
let me
this.
Say, and the name of his boat was, the name of his boat was Su Casa Mi Casa, meaning
that's
your
right.
house is my house.
That's right. Well, you know, this is where we're responsible for that. We allow Mr. David Stern to become what he is, and the courts enabled him to do the things that he do because don't think that he got that big without greasing some other pockets. Do you understand what I mean? But it still revolves around, Yusef says this a lot, it's your fault. They did everything right. They took you to court. They made statements. They tried you on. You didn't know any better. You lost
well,
your property.
The thing is, and part of this, though, is I wasn't even there. And the foreclosure happened while I wasn't there. And then the house was, the locks were changed.
Okay. Well, sister, let me ask you this. I know you're in Florida, and I do a lot of work in Florida. Florida is a judicial foreclosure state. So they had to take you to court. They had to serve you in order to do a foreclosure. So did you just not go? Because they couldn't do a foreclosure without serving you, proper service. So did you get served and you just didn't go? Or
that's
what
I was saying. I was out of town, so I didn't. I was at a conference, so I didn't get served.
So how
and
did they do a judicial foreclosure?
I don't know how they did it.
Did you abandon the property? Were you still living in the property when you were out of town?
I think that's what they're trying to say is that I abandoned the property.
Okay, and that's
when
what they're saying.
When I came back, they had taken the stuff out of my house and put locks
that's right.
on and changed the locks.
That's right. They have companies now that attorneys have created, and they're called I don't know what they're called, but they're companies that will ride around and they will look in properties, and if it looks to be abandoned, you can be out of town. If your mail is piling up, they will go ahead and get a locksmith and enter that property and remove everything in there. They're doing it illegally. In some instances, they're doing it legally. These companies are being sued, but they have teams of these type of companies that will come around and they so-called protecting the property, winterizing it, you know, turning off the water, clearing the pipes, you know, to make sure there's no damage to the property. So they will put you out. You have to have your neighbors say, listen, I'm going out of town. You see any particular action, let me know. Call me, let me know. And whatnot, but they will do that. A lot of times, most of the times, it's illegal, but you have to know how to make your property, have the grass cut, make it manicure it properly, and make sure it looks inhabited. But if you don't, they will go ahead and we sent two letters.
I think what they did, and the person that's in the house now, he has a real estate company, a construction company. His brother-in-law is a sheriff, a retired sheriff. So they know the hustle. They know what to do to get into these houses. And so he put his sign up, but when we contact the sign, we know that he had a real estate company at the time, but when you contact the number on the sign, there wasn't any way to contact him. And when you contact his information online, there's no way to contact him.
So this is what you need to do. You need to do a Rule 60B motion to set aside, void judgment, or set aside judgment, and go back and undo that foreclosure. Now, if you are telling me that they didn't serve you with process and you wasn't properly served, that should be pretty easy to do. Because if you was not served, then now let me tell you something else. It takes about 2 years to do a judicial foreclosure in Florida. So I don't see how they were able to go that long without your knowledge and get a foreclosure order.
They did it after a year. They did it after a year. I had some knowledge that it was coming. And by the way, I never got any of this through the mail. It was always a posting on the door. Of this, that, or the other.
But as far as the actual service, you're telling me it took a year. You're saying it took a year. That means from the filing of the summons and complaint all the way to default judgment, it took a year. I don't know how you would not know about an action pending in court and you were served properly. You need to pull that case, see who the process server was, and call them and be like, can you tell me when you served me? And if you, once you gather that information, then you need to go to the court and challenge the jurisdiction, also the order, and saying that you wasn't served properly. It has to be voided just on that fact alone. I was not served with process.
Okay.
And that's why it resulted in a default.
And I think that's that's the thing that I'm saying, too, is that when I actually go and look at the deed, it's saying that the state disqualified their deed and that my deed's the only verified deed because of the fact that I wasn't served.
Again, you're dealing with, as I spoke in the beginning of the show, you're talking deed to who? Who are you talking about? Like, who's David Stern?
Like, when
I understand. Listen to my question, sister. Listen, I understand what you're saying. I'm asking you that question in a sort of sarcastic way. When you're talking, you start talking all that subject matter. Before we get to subject matter, we have to do what? Identify who we're talking to. Look, forget the deed. They can put anything in the county recorder, and Brother Youssef knows that. They can put anything they want in there. You can go down there and file something in the county recorder on a napkin, handwritten, if you want to. They have to take it and file it. That means nothing, okay, because we know that's inadmissible. That means nothing. That it is no validity to you filing something in the county recorder. That becomes the Bible, okay? It becomes truth and fact and law. It doesn't. So let's look at the fact. Look, you conducted a foreclosure. I wasn't served. That means that judicial action that you taken has to be stricken, has to be voided. You have to start all over and serve me properly and give me an opportunity to defend, which is what court is for. So let's just focus on that only.
Okay.
Forget about the deed. Forget about everything else. You wasn't served.
Okay.
You say you wasn't served. You
go
back to that court. You file your appropriate motion, 60B motion, motion to set aside judgment. Let me tell you, the courts don't like default judgments. They actually like to litigate. That's what they get paid for. They don't like default. It's disfavored. They want parties to litigate. But they'll take it if you don't want to show up. But if you can come to the court and be like, listen, Judge, I wasn't served. I mean, hey, as a process server, he said he served me, but I've never seen this guy. He never served me. So, you know, there was a big case in New York. I don't know if Brother Youssef knows about it. In New York, there was a process server, some attorneys that got sued and I believe arrested. They had served on a sewer, something about some sewage cases, and they had said they served hundreds of people. They were serving them at their last known addresses and just running a flim-flam. I'm talking about there was like $100 million involved. And that suit is still going on.
Every single case I get from everybody who was coming into my office for a third-party debt collection, every single one of them said that they didn't get served, that they served me at an old address or address I didn't live at. Every single one. That's why I try to tell people, the default rate is 85%. These people are telling the truth when they say they didn't get served. Now, I had an office. They come in my office left and right and say, I didn't get served. So we do a motion to vacate for lack of subject matter jurisdiction, improper service, something like that, and get them another court date. You're right. But that is something. They are intentionally not serving people at the proper address.
That's right.
And, you know, another thing, too, is I got a letter because I sent these defaults out, and they sent me a letter 2 months later saying it was on October, saying that they received it on October 10th when I know that I sent it. They should have received it like August 23rd. But anyway, they're trying to ask me what the loan number is. And I'm like, well, it wasn't a loan number.
Well, I'm glad you brought up loan numbers, and let me say this that's very important. I'm glad you brought that up. You have to understand that loan account numbers, that is, they are OMB numbers, okay? And Brother Youssef, look it up. I won't go into that because my point is simply you can't change an account number. If you open up a bank account, okay, and you have money in that account, okay, and the bank says we're going to close that account and assign you a new account number, you will do a signature card, you will do all that stuff, and you will get information on that new account number. We're going to transfer your funds from your old account to your new account. But what you'll find with these debt collectors is that your original account number, which has an OMB number attached to it, okay, that original account number has already been extinguished, either paid off, credit default swap insurance, PMI insurance, whatever it is. they're going to always send you a new account number and say, hey, we're the debt collector ABC, and you know, we're referencing your old account number. This is your new account number. And you're going to be like, what new account number? How can you change an account number and start a new account number with a number that was that you never had any jurisdiction or authorization to have access to one? And to change it, though, you are communicating and acquiescing to that new account number. You got to be like, look, I don't know what you're talking about with that new account number. I don't recognize it. I don't even recognize the old one. But if you're saying that the old one applies to me, we're going to stay on the old account number. You don't have the authority, and Youssef would notice, to create money of account and just create another account number and say that that account represents $200,000. Do you see how easy, as people say, in thin air, that they could create money of account just by changing and saying, okay, we got a new account number with the same balance from the old account number.
Well,
now
see,
you're creating a whole new debt.
What they're trying to say, they're trying to ask me what the account number is, but they, I think they realized that I wasn't falling for that one, so they sent me another letter a few days later asking for the address because they're saying, you know, because I sent them the default notice about them not returning my property. And so now they're saying, okay, well, we don't, even though I gave them the information off the public records of where the fraudulent foreclosure was entered into public record, they're saying, oh, well, we don't know. Give us an address.
Sure. And again, sister, you're doing a lot of subject matter talking, and you're talking to them like they're lenders and they're creditors, and you're saying, I'm saying that you can cry all day long and say you did it wrong, you did this, mm-hmm. and you're not this, until you sue them. Okay,
mm-hmm.
and bring them
okay.
before the court of competent jurisdiction.
Okay.
Talking.
So in
you
other words, suing them under
money,
Rule 60.
Your money is suing them. You want to set aside the judgment or just bring an entirely new action and sue them for the foreclosure. Wrongful foreclosure, Fair Debt Collection Practices Act violations. You can throw in some Tiller and some RESPA just for fluff. Okay.
But see,
you may
I've been
it,
doing
may
the
not.
Notice. Because I've been trying to do it, kind of keep it private, like, you know, Youssef speaks about, and just and provide them
yeah,
with notices.
Okay. Yeah, but that's not private. Your mortgage transaction is public. It's in the public records.
Okay.
So, you know, what Youssef teaches you is your behavior aside from those public transactions that you willingly do. Too late for that on a private and a mortgage. It's nothing private. Again, you're dealing with debt collectors. They have no interest in your home. You don't owe them any money. You never signed an application. You never was provided services from them. You don't owe them. So all the subject matter stuff you're talking about is null and void. When you go to Spain, you're going to have to speak Spanish. You're going to have to learn some Spanish. Okay?
Okay.
If not, then they're not going to understand you. So when you talk to a debt collector like a creditor, they don't understand you. When you talk to a creditor like a debt collector, they don't understand you. You
do
have
I need
to
respond
learn
to
the
their
language.
Request? Do I need to respond to their request
What's
for
request?
An address? Well, they're requesting an address.
Listen, I don't, again, identity. I don't know who you are. Well, what's your Social Security number? I don't know. I might not have a Social Security number. What do you need? Do I owe you any money? Listen, this is an attempt to collect the debt, right? So, okay, I need you to validate and verify your alleged debt in writing only. In writing only. Once you provide me with that documentation, and I warn you in advance, do not provide me with any bank ledgers or Excel spreadsheets or statements that may be construed as a debt. That's nothing to me. That means nothing. That's just garbage. That's you trying to certify that I owe you money. But where did you get that information from? Where did you extrapolate that information from? What is the origin of that information? You're saying you obtained this alleged debt from somebody else. Well, brother, you're in trouble if that's what you're relying upon, because your whole case is going to crumble like crumb cake. What do you mean you got – who did you get it from? Oh, you got it from the computer. Well, you have the business records exception, rules of evidence, 802, 801, 902. Read those and understand what evidence is. Evidence is not what somebody say. Just because you say it, don't make it so. Well, I can understand you saying that. You're a debt collector. You want to take my property, but you got to prove it.
Mm-hmm. So even though they're responding to the notice of that I sent of default, I can ignore their request for
ma'am, I'm not,
address.
And I'll say this, and then we probably got to go to another question. What I'm telling you
okay.
is change your mindset, and your mindset needs to be to identify and sue. You don't have to respond to anything when you don't know. Again, you won't answer the door if Pookie knocked on the door. So you need to know who you are. You're asking me for money. You're asking me for proprietary information. I need to know who you are. And then when I determine who you are, then I'll determine what information I'll provide based on who you are. If you're a debt collector, I'm not giving a $10 an hour employee or you know, these debt collectors, they hire a lot of the drunks and addicts and everything else, and that's how we get identity theft. If these people have your social, your date of birth, they call you, you give them everything, and you don't know who
they
are.
Can I send that motion to set aside judgment directly to the chief judge of the court?
Ma'am, you going? Why you want to talk to the chief judge? Just be a normal person. Just file your motion to the court, do your motion to vacate, motion to set aside, void judgment, and file it just like anybody else would. You don't have to talk to the chief judge. They don't care about you.
Okay.
They don't. You're not gonna have any leniency or any favor with any of these public officials. If you know who you are, you will be able to speak to them as such and understand the master-servant relationship. You understand what I mean? And stop trying to create, you know, friends, you know, or people that have sympathy and empathy for your matter. There's thousands of foreclosures a month.
You know what? I had a judge. I was in a foreclosure case. I was in court, and a judge said, this one time I never forget, he said, it's a shame that public servants got to tell private citizens what to do.
He said,
and everybody was just sitting there, you know, what the hell? He just said, they don't even know they're private citizens, number one. Because they don't know the difference between public and private. But that judge said, it's a shame public servants got to tell private citizens what to do. Hey, we got to move to the next call, though. I got a lot of people to answer, a lot of people questions.
Okay, thank you. Bye-bye.
All right, you're welcome, sister. You're welcome. Real quick, we got 2 minutes left on the stream. For everybody, we got an hour left on the show. I see all the people online. I'm going to take a quick break. I'm going to come right back, all right? Right back real quick, and we're going to continue the show. I'll be right back. Okay, I'm back. Let me bring in the next caller. Let's see. Let's go down to 312 area code. You're on high-frequency radio, Illinois, Chicago, Illinois.
Man, peace to the guys, man. This is Samuel from Chicago.
Peace.
I just want to say that I thank both you brothers, man, for what you're doing. You know, we should take this information and look to help the elderly in the neighborhoods and in our communities, you know, that put their time in to even get us to the point to where we can, you know, enjoy having the freedom where we can exchange and dialogue and discourse the way we're doing right now. I did have a question, but in your discourse, you answered it already. So I just want to relay my peace and say peace and one love to everybody out there.
Peace, brother. Thank you.
Thank you, brother. Thank you, brother. Appreciate it. All right, let's go back to the lines. Let's dip down to, let me see what area code this is. Let's dip to Pennsylvania real quick. PA, you're on the line, 267-0041, PA. Pennsylvania.
Yes, I'm here.
Okay.
Hello.
Go ahead.
All right. I'm sorry, I was at the bank, and I had to come outside in order to answer the phone. Yes, I'm thoroughly enjoying the show, and unfortunately, I have to admit that because of my own ignorance of the law and dealing with time frames and dealing with the law, I just wanted to know, is there a recourse after you have been in a state, and also we have to know that in Pennsylvania, this is an extremely corrupt judicial system. And in Pennsylvania, every time I tried to get help, people saying, you know, well, Pennsylvania is really hard. You know, they got it really on lockdown and blah, 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 blah. I was directly evicted out of my home, actually came and stormed in the sheriff along with the quote-unquote police officers, the whole nine yards, and my things were taken out. I did not leave my home. I've been fighting them. I had started the process when they started in 2008. I sent a writ of discovery. They declined to respond. Of course, at that point, I was not sufficient in taking continued steps, and I actually stayed in my home for another 3 years and ended up being this year that I was evicted out of the house, put out. And I want to know how I can learn quickly. I need the sure resources that will teach me how to do this paperwork. I've heard people saying, you know, you have to study, you have to study. That's all well and good, but I don't have that concept law background. And sometimes you're reading things, and it's not clicking as to how you can, you know, adopt it for your specific situation. And that's what we really need. You know, everybody's going through things, and people have different situations. But, you know, it's a lot of information. We don't know how to cipher through it and use what is specific for me. Can you
I
help
agree
me
with you,
that?
Sister. I sure can. And this is why I'm bringing this remedy and sharing it. Brother Youssef has extensive knowledge. We both studied for years. He tells you on the show all the time, he cuts through the fat and say, okay, focus on this. This is remedy. I've been in the movement a long time, and everybody says study. Well, that's not going to help me right now from losing my house. It's not going to help me right now from having my bank account garnished. It's not going to help me right now from having the IRS take everything I have. So we have to provide remedy. I'm giving you the remedy. The FDCPA, the FCRA, and in Pennsylvania you have, which I do a lot of cases as well, you have what they call the PFCEU. It's a Pennsylvania Fair Credit Extension Uniformity Act. That's your state version of the FDCPA, your consumer protection laws. I just mentioned to you that those acts are not long, and those laws are specifically drafted for lay people. They are least sophisticated consumer-minded information and laws. It's easy for you to understand. It's not much for you to study and understand. I just read it to you. It's not long. You can get punitive damages out of those laws. You can get actual damages out of those laws. You can get consequential damages out of those laws. You can get statutory damages out of those laws. Do you understand what I'm saying? Forget about the house. Yes. What I tell people all the time, if you fight hard for the house, they're going to fight hard to take it. If you say, I don't even want the house, I want that money, and understand that those acts, and I'll say this importantly, those acts that I mentioned to you, the FDCPA, the FCRA, and your consumer protection laws, is not about the debt. I'm going to repeat this. It is not about the debt. They can have a good debt and still violate those laws. Do you understand what I'm saying? I'm going to say that again. They can have a good debt and still violate those laws. By what? Saying you owe $105 when you owe $102. That's a misrepresentation. Okay? They can't do that. By sending you a letter that purports to be legal process. What is that? An assignment. So when you take them to court, they're going to argue, well, you got this debt, and you got, well, you know what? This is not about the debt. This is about your behavior in collecting the debt. That's what it's about. Simple as that. I tell people, I help people go to court, small claim court, and they owe $400 on a debt collector, but the debt collector broke several laws that's worth $1,000 each. So what we say to the judge is simply, hey, judge, they want to argue about the debt because that's all they can talk about. So for all intents and purposes, and just for humor's sake, I'll pay them the $400 out of the $10,000 that they owe me. You understand what I mean? They're not going to ever ask you for that debt, but that's the only thing they can talk about. It is not about the debt, Judge, and you know it. These particular statutes and acts are about their behavior while attempting to collect that debt. I can owe you $1 million, and if you violated one of the provisions of those acts, I can get punitive damages and actual damage of $2 million. So is it about the debt? No, it's about your performance and how you collected the debt. You lied, you provided misrepresentation, you sent me a letter that was supposed to be legal process and it wasn't, you said you was a debt collector, but then in another part of the letter, you said you was a creditor, you said you were performing under the contract of the deed of trust or the mortgage, but then at the end you said you're a debt collector. You can't be both. You can't be a municipal court judge and a district court judge. Which one are you? You can't fall under statute or fall under the Constitution. Which one are you? It's all about identifying who you are and who they are. Okay?
Yes.
Did I ask your question, sister?
I had a headphone on so that I wouldn't be disturbing other people. Thank you, thank you, and thank you. And could you please give your information again so that...
Yes, Brother Sharif, the email address is thelawmaster44@yahoo.com. thelawmaster44@yahoo.com. Brother Sharif.
Thank you.
Uh-huh. All right. Okay, thank you, sister. You still there? Okay,
yes, sir.
You got off the line. Let me go to the next caller. Florida, 305 area code. Florida, you're on high frequency radio.
Peace.
305.
Peace. Yeah.
You're there?
Okay, I had a little difficulty. I couldn't. Okay, yeah. What's the name of the brother on the phone call? First of all, greetings to all you guys and queens on the phone line.
Brother Sharif, greetings, brother.
Yeah, greetings, man. Yeah, it's amazing. I'm just hearing you, you know, with what I know already and what you're doing. Everything is absolutely correct on the debt. And earlier when you guys were talking about, you know, it's not about as far as in these criminal cases, man, never the scope of the thing is not about what happened, you know what I mean? It's more about looking how you react to it. And I can say, you know, I had a situation, man, and this big-time lawyer, man, he basically broke down to me a little bit on things. And I'm like, man, you know what I'm saying? And now I hear you talking on here. And as far as you were saying, you spoke to the sheriff, I've been contacting the Homeland Security down here with the FBI. You got some good people, man, and basically, you know, me speaking to those people, man, they're just saying the people is basically what allows all this to happen, and we got the work to do behind y'all. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So it is
right.
True. We have to educate also our officials, because I'm around a lot of officials, you know, and I also start to do that. So when I hear you saying that, that's what I be telling my partners, man. We have to now come collectively to these county officials, man. That's the only way we're going to have results. It ain't no other way, but as far as the counties and in our county where we live at, our state, that's the only way we're going to see effect. And they telling me this now. I'm not saying this. This is what the FBI agent, the Homeland Security officer told me. And big-time lawyers down here in Miami, that's well-known. So I'm like, you know, what y'all saying is actually true. So everybody that's hearing this, man, y'all need to take heed to this man and Yusuf, because they really, really put in real, real knowledge. This is real knowledge. You know, that's all I got to say, man.
Peace, brother. And I'll just piggyback on that, whether it's criminal or not, brother. We just got to study law, and we'll understand that we can get out of these situations. I hear Yusuf be bleeding with y'all to just listen to him. He's done a million hours of studying, and he spends 3 hours every day to try to reduce that amount of studying he has done to a few hours, and he's bleeding with you. But the white man, I'll tell you, fill out this application, and I'll give you some cheese and some crackers, and we'll fill that thing out. We won't even answer any questions. You know, you're going to get some cheese and crackers for the next month. We got to change our mentality, man, because when brothers come, we think that everything comes from so-called the underground is watered down. But you're getting more de jure information here than you will get in any law school. What do you think law school teach? How to double talk, double speak, triple talk, talk around the facts, dance around the facts. I just told you I would talk to attorneys. You don't have no facts. Shut up. You ain't got nothing to say. You're not going to make much money with me, man. You better go get somebody else, man. And then that way, an attorney, two attorneys on the case, what they do? They play around. Hey, man, I'm going to bill them block 10 grand. What you going to bill them? Okay, well, I'm going to do this, but you know it's wrong. Yeah, I know it's wrong, but I don't care, man. You know, we going to go ahead and milk this out. Whoever, they don't care. Listen, if you're getting paid whether you win or lose. Do you really give a damn whether you lose? Yeah, for competitive purposes, but a lot of attorneys are not competitive. I want to win because I can win, but if you're getting paid win or lose, what do you care? You don't. You don't.
Right. You're right.
But if you tell that attorney,
right,
look, you're not gonna get paid, man, unless you win. I had a reverend that I did as a client. He spent $100,000 on an attorney, two of them. He spent $40-some thousand with one, and $50,000 on another. And he came with me after a month. I had cleared up all of his problems. And he said, the attorney said these words. He says, "Yeah, I know I fucked up. I dropped the ball." I said, "What? How did you feel when he said that to you?" You understand? He says, "I just didn't know what to do." See, they feel like we are prey. Do you understand? They feel like they can say anything to us, do anything to us, and then we're not going to do anything because they're attorneys. But let me tell you something. I make a good living dealing with them, suing them brothers. They are easy. They are the low-hanging fruit. Do you understand? They are the ones that's put in the front with the rifle. You got to shoot them first.
you understand? I mean, you're right, because I got a client right now, and he has a big-time attorney also, and I met with this man, and I basically sum it up on, like, I asked the guy, I said, "Let me see the service warrant." And this warrant don't have no, I mean, it's just straight buffoonery, you know what I mean? And I said, "I don't see a seal on this search warrant." Now, when I went to the lawyer, I pointed out. I said, "I just want to ask a few questions." So, you know, big office, nice scenery, got his partner with him, you know. I said, "I'm not here to talk about what happened or what took place, but I just want to know, this is a paper that start this whole scenario, and here we don't have, I don't know what type of signature that is, and there's no seal of any clerk, you know, certifying this document. Can you know, how you helping, you know, my client? I mean, how you helping him? So that's his client. I'm just coming as an act in the disguise as a brother." So I'm like, "You know, my brother here worried, man, so we want to check, you know, what's going on. Like, is this warrant, search warrant official?" And he just said, "Well, hey, I've been doing this for 20 years, and, I think all it needs is a judge signature. I don't see why it needs a seal." So I'm like, "Wow. So he just needs a signature." I said, "Can we see the original that you have?" He said, well, the one you have is not the actual one, but I have it right here in front of me." So I'm like, "Can I see that one?" The man ain't want to give it to me. So I said, "Okay, well, that one got a seal on it?" He said, "Nah, but why are you worrying about a seal for? I don't think it needs a seal. It just needs a judge signature." So I'm like, "Yeah, well, that's kind of odd, because got to have a, you know, to be certified, got to be official document. So if an officer or the sheriff has this document signed by a judge, I'm believing the court has to have some type of seal on this." You know what I mean? For the type of case it is. And he basically ignored, you know, everything I say. "Hey, you don't know the law. I'm here to tell you the law and this and that. That your client here, you know, your brother here." And he just went on with it, man. I said, "Okay, well, what makes this a crime? Since you say you're a lawyer, you've been doing this for 20 years. Now, this is a, you know, drug case now, so there's no victim." I said, "Who's the, you know, what's going on?" He like, "Well, you know, the state basically has him here, the officer and all this, have him selling, and there's a CI that has him on camera from an officer with the CI that's working together. And we, you know, he reading it saying a black male with, you know, described selling narcotics and all these terminology, which we know the IRS uses." So I said, well, where's the victim then? Because you're reading something to me, but it's not constituting any crime or, you know, no damages or nothing. So how is it a crime?" He said, "Nah, it's not a crime, it's a felony." So he's just tripping up on his words. And I got a recording on it too, you know what I'm saying? And he basically, you know, just admitted to me. When the guy stepped out of the room, I ain't going to take it too long because it's a little bit longer. But he said to me, saying that I never thought he'd say. He said, I don't remember the movie, but he referred to a movie that they were singing in the end of this movie about when we come together, we conspire. And I know it's some symbolic, you know, some symbolic things he's saying to me, but I didn't pick up on it until later on. But he was basically saying, "I see you know what you know, but in this society, once you join it, you keep your mouth closed." So I'm like, "Wow." He said, "Okay, have a nice day." You know what I mean? You're a very smart young man, but have a nice day. You know, that's it. And that's all he said, but I'm like, okay.
That's that example I'm talking about. When you hear me on this show and I talk about if you do this long enough, you're going to meet them. You'll meet attorneys. Every now and then you're going to meet one. He's going to give you a little bit of tidbit. He's going to say something to you, you know. Like, you know, he's going to say something big. I know some major attorneys in Georgia. I'm not even going to say their name on the air. Told me some stuff, you know. And I'm like, wow, I can't believe he's telling me this, what he's saying. But they're always going to tell it to you one-on-one, and they ain't going to tell you much. It's going to be brief.
Right.
But it's going to be enough. It's going to be enough because they want to help you. Some of them want to help you, but they can't.
He saw that. We know what's going on. They can't. Exactly. That's what he's telling me also. You know, between the line, I know what that's what he's saying. Oh, I see you know, but I can't do it.
Let me tell you something. I don't know what it is that they got on them attorneys. It's some type of threat of death or something like that. But every time I get into certain conversations with them about certain information, I mean, they just ball up. I got friends who are attorneys. I can't even talk certain stuff before.
They do the same thing. Well, Brother Yusuf and the brother on the call, listen, that is a society. You got to understand, and that society right now is ruling the world because we allow them to. The foreigners create laws for their society, and their society is going to protect each other. No, they're not going to tell you the secrets to their society, and they're held tight-lipped because I have attorneys that won't even go in and do certain things that I will do or tell people to because they can't. They're not going to listen. No attorney's going to go in there and open up the floodgates to get rid of trillions of dollars in fraudulent mortgages. Do you understand? That's trillions of dollars that they will steal themselves to enrich themselves, i.e. David Stern and the rest of these people that do so. So they're not going to tell you certain things. Sure, they want to, but they take an oath. Do you understand? And they know how serious oaths are, and everybody on this call should know how serious oaths are. They take an oath. Now, you know, you have masonry. They take oaths. So, you know, you can't reveal certain secrets and things of that nature or proprietary information within that society. So you have to respect that. But look, you have the law. You are law. You don't need their secrets. Their secrets is to keep people oppressed, to keep people economically destitute, and to keep people stupid. So whatever secrets they are, their secrets is not within the law. You just have to read and understand who it applies to and what law is, and it don't matter what their secrets are. Brother Yusuf has said this over and over again. Once you get rid of the fear, I'm just telling you, once you get rid of the fear, that's it.
Speaking about fear, before this happened yesterday now, I have another case where I went into a courtroom down here in Miami in front of a judge. Now, I ain't had no paperwork because this guy just had a real quick court date, man, out of nowhere. And I just, you know, tried to help. So I went in there dressed up sharp, you know what I'm saying? When I went in there, they basically thought I was an attorney. So, you know, I went in and spoke to the clerk, first the bailiff, and I let him know I'm here on behalf of such and such. And you know, the name of the person, and I say, he said, are you a lawyer, attorney? I said, yeah, I'm an attorney in fact. So I, you know, he said, go over there to the prosecutor, and you know, find out what you need to find out, or the clerk. So I went over to the clerk, and they treated me like an attorney because, you know, I had his demeanor. Now, it's going to take too long to explain that, but, you know, I got a swag, I'll say, when I come in there, I'll act the way they act. Now, I say, let me, as I walk in here, this is my first time doing this now. I said, you know what? I'm going to just do this. So I went in there, sharp, suit tied up, and went in there, spoke to that clerk after the bailiff told me, go in, get the information you need from the prosecutor attorney or, you know, the clerk. I went and I spoke to the prosecutor first. She brought me in the back. So me and her talking, you know, I'm using a little language they use. So she, you know, she felt like I was an attorney. So when I went in the back, you know, I told her what it is, and then she ain't like that. And she came back out with me, you know, long story short, she came back out and said, okay, well, the defendant is not here. We'll be waiting on him. Now, the judge is sitting there all this time watching me, and the guy had some administrative work in. So when his name was called and I stood up and they actually brought him in, the judge said, what you here for? So I said, I'm an attorney in fact on behalf of such and such. Has the court, can we have a sidebar? I asked him, can we have a sidebar? Because I didn't want to say much because the guy, I don't know what, because I didn't get to speak to him or nothing, so I don't know what he's going to say, so I ain't trying to let him hurt himself, but I'm trying to get the judge to basically side with me so I could talk the situation privately on his behalf, if the judge allowed that. Now, the judge basically saw that I wasn't a lawyer because I wouldn't be doing that. As soon as he saw that, he attacked me. Are you a licensed attorney? If you're not, then you're going to be arrested. So I'm like, oh, man, I'm in a situation now. So I'm like, okay, I said I'm an attorney in fact on behalf of such and such. The whole courtroom got real silent, like, hold up, this man just walked up here like an attorney, went walking. You know how they walk around? I walk around freely by the inmates looking for the dude. So the judge like, hold up, this guy's been doing all this stuff, and he's not a licensed attorney. Hold up, man. He ain't one of us. Sir, I'm telling you right now, you just committed a crime. You just committed a felony. I'm going to arrest you if you don't leave this courtroom. So I'm like, Your Honor, I don't understand. I just told you here for the record, I'm here on behalf of such and such, and I would just like to know the status on the case. I haven't spoke to the prosecutor yet because she has not, gave any information, and I would like to have a sidebar with you since the prosecutor has not given, the proper information that was requested on behalf of, the name, the person's name. So the judge got so upset, he told the bailiff secretly to come behind me and start doing the little handcuff stuff. But the people in the courthouse swear I was an attorney because all the attorney was coming up to me, hey, man, nice tie, and it was, grooming me, whatnot. And
well, you should be offended at that because until they fear the people who are the true lawyers of this country, you should be offended. I get that all the time. I mean, you can think what you want. I get offended by that because do you think you're the only one? I have to be an attorney to know law? Are you kidding
me? Right.
That's offensive to me. But I'll just say this. Learn the difference between being an attorney at law and what at and in is. Are you at the pool or are you in the pool? Are you at the mall or are you in the mall? Are you at the courthouse or are you in the courthouse? When you learn the differences in that terminology of what at in is, then you don't have to worry about all those solicitations for you to be an attorney. Again, the Bar Association is an association like the National Basketball Association. They have rules for their members.
I need them with that.
Do you understand what I mean? They have rules for their members, for their society. They're not a governmental organization. Okay, they're not a part of the executive branch of government, the judicial branch of government. I think Brother Youssef could be to co-sign that. So, I hear a lot of people say, well, I'm not an attorney. I'm not giving legal advice. Well, why are you? It's almost like you not being Catholic and you saying, I want to give a big ups to the Catholics. Like, if you're not an attorney, why do you have to even preface your statement by saying that? We are so fearful of this association, and they're nothing but what? A private society and organization who has membership and dues cards to go into these private venues, these alleged courts, and to execute their job function. That's it. You don't have to be an attorney to go in there. And research when attorneys were created. What was it before attorneys? What was it before what religion was here, or so-called religion was here before Christianity? So we have to just go back and look into those things. But, understand, Brother Yusuf says all the time, you got to be licensed to do certain things, and you do.
You do. That's why I ain't did much that day. He ain't give me no chance, man. But the fear, like what I did, there was no fear in me, and he really saw that this guy really bold as fuck to come up in here doing
that. Yeah, you can always come back at him and say, because I got hit with something like that in court, too. And I just told the judge I wasn't aware that the practice of law can be licensed. They're not practicing law, Brother Youssef.
That's right. You ain't practicing nothing. How do you practice something for 50 years?
And also, it's legal. They say you give legal advice. Legal and lawful are two separate things. Legal is that business that's going on.
Anytime you say you're going to arrest me, right, I always imply, Your Honor, with all respect, I don't understand what you're trying to I imply here that I'm practicing law. I just told you, I just stated on the record that I'm here in fact, attorney in fact on behalf of such and such. Every time I said that, he changed it all. Oh, well, you know, you're doing something illegal. You know, you could be arrested. I'm like, come
but
on.
Brother, again, I'm going to point out one thing to you, and you keep saying that. If you go to the Dominican Republic, they will have words that is used in the common English language that means something
right.
different. Okay, so
right.
what he keeps saying to you is that he's speaking to you in his foreign native tongue, his language.
Right.
You are practicing law. How do you define what I'm doing in my private capacity? How do you put a label on what I do? How do you label my car a motor vehicle because that's how you describe it in your statute? That's my conveyance. That's my whip. That's my automobile. That's my consumer product. That's my thing. That's my whatever you want to call it. I define my property. You're saying the practice of law. But that's your language. That's your terminology. That's what you use in your society. And since I'm not a part of that society, how are you going to extract a word out of your society and do a blanket around everything that I do and say, hey, man, that's what we do in our society. That's practicing law. No, y'all fools if y'all practicing something for 100 years and you haven't mastered it. I don't practice anything. You understand what I'm saying? You have a practice
right.
as a basketball team, and then you have a game time. There's no practicing in game time. You got to make your shots. You got to work your plays, and you got to execute, and you got to master it in order to win a game. I'm not practicing anything. Y'all do. And y'all haven't perfected anything. So you saying that I'm practicing, I dispute that because that's your language. Define what practicing is. You see what
right,
I mean?
Right.
It's,
okay.
It's just all
in the mind. It's all in the mind, and I got to move to the next call.
I got a lot of people.
Oh, yeah, right.
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 Hey, appreciate it, brother. Appreciate
all right.
the time,
good
man.
Work, man.
Appreciate it.
Peace to God.
Peace,
brother.
Yeah, I like that, brother. I like he brings in. He brings some good experience to the show all the time.
Yes,
every
sir.
Time he comes on the show. Let me bring Missouri in next. 316 Harry Cole. I know you've been holding for a while. Missouri, 816, you're on High Frequency Radio.
Hi, yourself. This is Paulette. I was in class last night.
Oh, okay. How you doing?
All right, and hi to your guests, too, as well. I really can relate to what he's saying, and I like how he explained it and given some really good examples I can relate to. I just wanted to share what I'm going through. I did an administrative process. I sent through by notary presentment a notice of correction for fraud and to cease and desist, revoking the indentures of the deed of trust. And they didn't respond to me through the notary. They just sent me a packet, and they sent a whole bunch of stuff that they printed out from the county online. Stuff like
okay. That's what they're going to do. Yeah, you're going to ask
yeah,
for certain information,
do.
And they're going to send you a copy of the deed that you filed 10 years ago and be like, here's your
yeah.
proof, shut up. But that's not what you asked for. And as soon as they send you that, it's considered a non-response, and you sue
that's
them. I asked this particular debtor to identify himself and provide verification or validation pursuant to 15 U.S.C. 1692G. The response I got was a non-response. They sent me some instruments that was publicly filed, and that is not admissible, nor does it determine the identity of this alleged creditor. And you sue them just on that. Now, I'm being real simple with you. Y'all can do
okay.
all the administrative process, and you can do all this in the deed. Again, you're mentioning deed to a debt collector. They don't know nothing about – listen. I've had debt collectors on the stand. Do you know what a mortgage is? No. Do you know what a deed of trust is? No. Do you know what Section 15 says of your deed of trust? No. Do you know what Section 22 says? Do you know what Section 20 says? Do you know what Section 23 says? No. Well, I thought you said you were a lender. You were a creditor. You didn't read the contract you purport to be enforcing? What do you know? All I know is I'm a damn debt collector. Right. That's all you are. You're not a mortgager. You're not a creditor. So when you talk deed to them, you're not talking deed. You're not talking mortgage because they are debt collectors. You have to change your language, and when you change your language, you will get a different response, okay? Being that I know I can identify you, oh, you're a sheriff. Okay, sheriff, you're the highest form of law enforcement in the county. This is what I need you to do. You won't go to the municipal police department
and say, do they ever serve you with complaints or indictments or anything? No, municipal police department don't. Why? That's not their function. That's not their language. You would go to the sheriff or the marshal. So you have to know who you're talking to. Stop talking deeds unless you know you have a creditor in front of you. Now, once you determine, okay, well, maybe that's a creditor. That is my creditor. Okay, well, then let me talk this language to you. I'm going to send you a QWR because I got some problem with my mortgages. I got all kind of instruments filing. You know, the deed says that any sale of the note or any partial sale of the note, you have to notify me. You didn't do that under the Truth in Lending Act, which is the Dodd-Frank Act, 15 U.S.C. 1641. Gee, you didn't send me and let me know you sold that debt to somebody. So I got all these debt collectors calling me, sending me letters. That's a breach of the contract. You didn't send me, you know, you didn't respond to my QWR, and I asked for certain servicing information and certain payment information. I asked you to audit the account and determine if the amount you're purporting that I owe is correct. You didn't do that. You see what I mean? My language is different when I'm speaking to a creditor and a lender. If I'm talking to a debt collector, I'm not talking about a mortgage or a deed. I'm talking about a defaulted debt, charged off, alleged debt. We're not getting into subject matter. You got it?
Got it. Yeah, and you said I just filed a complaint with which court?
You can use your small claims court, depending on the jurisdictional amount. Small claims court is for you to get an order. Because this is how you start the stage. You get an order. I tell people small claims because it gives you an opportunity to demonstrate in court to release all that fear in a situation or a hearing or a legal venue that's not that much to be lost. Okay, you don't have a whole lot to lose. So you go into small claims court, you be like, Judge, I need you to make a determination of whether this is a debt collector or a creditor. Because I'm looking at these letters and they're saying two or three things. Or they're saying that they're all of them. They sent me this letter. I don't know who they are. They're telling me they're going to take my house. They're threatening that I owe them some money. I don't know who they are. I asked them to identify themselves. They send me a copy of some mortgage agreement, and I don't even know what that mortgage agreement is because that doesn't look like the document that I signed. So I need you to determine. And the judge is going to be like, okay, well, who are you? It's real simple. I know y'all say the courts is crooked, but if you present the facts to the court the way it's supposed to, you'll have better success when you do the things that I'm telling you. But if you go in there and you start talking mortgage and you start talking assignment and you start talking securitization, you have too many loopholes or too many things you don't know to where that court's going to be like, you know what, you just didn't prove your case. You talking about a whole bunch of things that's just on the internet, and you don't really know what you're talking about. Let's just stick to one thing I tell my people. Focus on consumer debt protection laws. Let's focus on that because that will stop a foreclosure. That will stop a debt collector. If you get in your mind that this is just a debt collector, okay, and I already gave you the definition, and the definition I gave you I know covers all your mortgage people or entities that claim that they're mortgages and creditors. If you focus on that, you can go to small claims court, and you know how simple their complaints is. Look, they're sending me threatening letters talking about they can take my house. I state a claim that I don't know who they are. They appear to be a debt collector, but they appear to also be acting like they're a party to this contract that I may have executed 5 years ago. They fail to answer me, but they keep sending aggressive, and it keeps progressing to the point where now they're telling me they're going to evict me out of my house. So I'm suing them. And what is the judge going to decide? Well, it appears from the record you did get an assignment while the loan was in default, right? And it was sold from a third party to a third party to a fourth party to a fifth party, right? Okay, that's all I need to know, Judge. Get an order. Because what is that order worth? It's worth your house. Because now you have an order, a determination from the judge that you're a debt collector. Now, what are they going to do? They got to send you to continue to send you those letters, don't they? Or they got to leave you alone, correct? And then your tolling time starts because now you have statute of limitations, right? Because after a certain amount of time, they can't even come after the house, right? Even if they could, correct? Okay, right. So that's what you're doing. Real simple. I need you to determine, Judge, whether they're a debt collector or a creditor because I haven't seen this lender in a long time, and I heard they went out of business 10 years ago. I heard the FDIC shut them down. I heard the office of the comptroller shut them down. I don't know who these people are. But did you not have a mortgage? I don't recall. I did enter into some type of consume a transaction with this alleged person, but I don't have any proof that they ever loaned me any funds. I've realized through information from the SEC that the loan was securitized and therefore is a security under the UCC. So I'm confused, and I'm not supposed to be confused pursuant to the FDCPA because I'm a least sophisticated consumer. So let's break this down for me real easily, Judge. Can you just identify them for me since they failed to do so?
Right.
You see how easy that is? That's it.
Mm-hmm. And
that's it. I don't care if the judge gives you $500. I don't care if he gives you $500 for the violation. The order is worth the money because the order will determine who they are. Now you're a debt collector. So now I know when I talk to you, don't talk to me about no damn mortgage. Don't talk to me about no deed because the judge already determined you're a stranger to that contract. So that contract is nothing to you. It means nothing to you. You have to prove to me that I owe you money, and you can't. I'm telling you right now, there's not a debt collector in this country that can prove that you own a debt, period. Not one.
Right.
And it's not one that won't violate 10 laws by sending a simple letter. That I'm telling you for sure.
Okay.
So if you want to talk about getting money and we broke and we have bad economy and we don't have jobs, get your credit report out. I guarantee you have anywhere from $30,000 to $100,000 in your credit report.
Huh.
Period. You get letters in your mailbox that's worth thousands of dollars every day.
I understand.
I know guys who run a business. I think they'd like to get, $1,000 for violations,
yes,
of Fair Debt Collection Practices Act, and they run their whole business off getting paid off those violations.
Thank you. That's just what I'm saying, Brother Youssef. I make six figures,
yep,
a year dealing with that. In mail, just getting mail, because you understand they're gonna listen. If you look at the stock market, and I know Brother Youssef does this, I've been doing this for years. I teach people all around the country how to deal with this. It's affecting their pocketbooks, their stocks in stock market, their stocks on the stock markets. It's depleting because people are now defending themselves. Because why? You don't put the American people out of work. You done hit them with so much stuff. Now we're studying on traffic law. We're studying on the criminal procedure. We're studying on consumer protection law. See, they did a bad thing when they put us out of work because now we have more time to study. We have more time to unify. We have more time to do common unity, community work, and come together and be like, you know what? I'm making some money. I get checks every day. All I do is negotiate and settle every day with debt collectors because they will not go to trial. You will look up any case, and there has not been a debt collection case that has went to court in almost 20 years. I take that back. There's been two recently with Aquin. They got a $13 million judgment just for misplacing a homeowner's payment. Look that up on the Internet. Google Aquin,
wow.
$13 million judgment because they did some flim-flam like they do. Customer sent the payment. They misdirected the payment, did some old crack, some crooked stuff, and then the dude just sued them, and you'd see $12.8 million. Look up,
wow,
debt collection cases. You will see people had a credit card, a $3,000 credit card, and they got two wrong letters, and the punitive damages was $250,000. I'm not lying.
Wow.
Look it up. Do you understand? And this is all Fair Debt Collection Practices Act, Fair Credit Reporting Act, state consumer protection law. Some state consumer protection law give you triple damages, triple actual damages. What's an actual damage? Well, this is what I tell people to do. You got somebody in your credit report that ain't supposed to be in there. You want to file a dispute online with the credit bureau, right? In between that dispute, if they come back and they're going to come back and normally they're going to say, well, we verify that this debt belongs to you. Okay, from that point on, if they're in your credit report illegally, it is $1,000 per account per bureau. So if you have one account, that's $3,000 because you have Equifax, TransUnion, and Experian, right? So that $3,000 a month adds up. I let it add up for 6 months, 7 months. Seven times three, 21. 21 grand. All right, that's enough. Let me go file a complaint. Now I file a complaint, what happens? Immediately, a lot of times, 2 months, 3 months, depending on the attorney. Well, what do you want to do to settle this case? Well, I'm asking for $21,000, and that's not including punitive damages. You know, I applied for this credit card while you were in my credit bureau. I applied for this house. I was denied a job. What is that? That is actual damages. So you damaged me. I didn't get the $20,000 credit card. I didn't get the $50,000 750 BMW that I want. I didn't get that job. You see what I mean? You see how it goes on? I got emotional distress. I couldn't even talk to my kids. Couldn't look at my kids because you messed up my credit report by reporting this erroneous information, and I disputed it. Do you understand what I'm saying? You can make a living doing that, and then it's not hard. I've just told you. You didn't hear me mention case law. You didn't hear me spit out a bunch of legalese, which I can. Did I? No. I said simply, you asked a few simple questions.
All right. Thank you so much. I really appreciate your time. Thank you, Yusuf.
Brother, thank you. Brother, you are getting down. I got to give you five stars because I'm sitting here. I'm really engrossed. I'm like, yeah. Yeah, I'm really engrossed in what you're saying. You're flowing, boy. You're flowing.
I told you, Brother Yusuf, I wanted to share this with you because, like I said, I get tired of people complaining and whining and arguing. I'm like you, Brother Yusuf. I'm just like, look. You can take me all the way back to A.D. 13. I want to know how I can get these shackles off of me economically and then turn those shackles around and put it right back on the people who put it on me and get some money. I want to get paid. I need money. It takes money to run a nation. It takes energy, and I'm getting energy. So all that talk people be talking about, and I'll be like, man, let me show you some checks. Do you understand? That's all I do. You check. All I do. My email's still a negotiation. They'll start off. I'll sue a debt collector for $5,000. Will you take $1,500? Nah, man. Call me when you up to about $4,000, and we'll talk. And they just gonna go back and forth, and then you're gonna get signed, man. I'm gonna go ahead and file a complaint. You know, I can send a notice of intent to sue, and a lot of times I'll get a check. Listen, you pull my credit report. Let me talk about that. Most debt collectors will pull your credit. Nobody has the authority to pull your credit unless somebody you applied for credit with. You understand that? So many times you see the attorney firms will pull your credit. You'll see the debt collectors will pull your credit because that's how they find you. And they look at your credit and they size you up. They be like, okay, well, they got a 3-something credit score, so we ain't gonna go after that one because we ain't gonna get no money. Oh, they got a 700 credit score. They got a house, 2 cars. They got some credit cards. They go, yeah, bam, we're gonna send that collection on there. So we're going to pull the credit so we can find them, and then they'll tell you that we got a permissible purpose to pull your credit because we bought the debt. I'll be like, okay, well, you say that to the judge when I file this complaint in about 2 days. You can send me $1,000, and let me also say this. Under 1681Q, which is the Fair Credit Reporting Act, it is a felony for someone to access your private consumer credit report without a permissible, and that's the legal terminology, purpose, meaning that if I didn't apply for services or credit with you, you have no business. That is identity theft. Do you understand? You do not know this law firm. You do not know this debt collection company who mostly employs felons, and I don't have anything against felons, especially for our people, because that's what they try to do to us all the time. But these are street people that addicts coming out of drug programs, and they have access to all your proprietary information, and that's why we have so much identity theft, because people are pulling your credit report, and they're not supposed to. It is a felony, punishable under 18 U.S.C., Title 18, for pulling your credit report, punishable up to 2 years. Do you understand? It's serious. So when I negotiate with these jokers, I'll be like, who in the company is going to go to jail? Because I'm going to file a criminal complaint, which is simple to do, when I file my lawsuit, okay, and I'm going to tell that magistrate, look, I need you to go ahead and execute that criminal complaint, and I need to bring this debt collector in. I don't care who it is, attorney, ABC collection company, and I'm going to come in there. You know what that does? What do you want to do to settle? Okay, I need $5,000, okay? And I need my court costs, my $350 filing fee, and my paralegal cost, or my cost for filing these motions, paper, Kinko's, FedEx, whatever. Those are costs. And I make $1,000 a day in my occupation, so what? That is cost. I had to take 3 days out to build this complaint. That's $3,000. Do you understand? Y'all have costs, too. Attorneys just don't have costs. I tell them all the time, well, my time is worth just as much as the attorney. I make $500 a day working, so that is a damage when I had to come to court to sue you on something that I already sent you notice that you were violating. So, judge, that is cost, and they will give you those costs. Do you understand? If that attorney's here getting paid, you don't think I deserve to get paid being here? Of course I do. And they'll give it to you. It's just that we haven't been educated. and we have to be educated. So in your credit report, this is the money that you have. In your mailbox every day, this is the type of earning potential that you have. I have 27 people in the last year that I have trained that makes six figures doing exactly what I told you. Do you understand? And I don't blow no smoke. I don't have to. You ain't never heard of me. I'm not on the circuit. I don't have a poster. I don't have a billboard. I just make my money, and I listen to all the clowns that just talk about it or talk about this and talk about that. I make the money because it's easy money. Easy money.
Wow. Well, you're on fire. You're on fire. I got a lot of people their hands up. We ain't going to get to everybody. Let me try to get a couple of them. New York, New York. 718 area code. You're on high frequency radio.
Hello.
You're on the air.
Hello.
Hello. You're on the air.
Hey, what's happening? Peace, Islam. Assalamu alaikum. Question. I hope this can help the people. My lady had inherited an apartment or a condo, and clear and free from her grandparents, and she ended up getting a HELOC, and I believe she may have used the apartment as collateral. So my question is, what are some offensive measures that we can do to alleviate ourselves of this so-called debt?
Okay, you say you got a HELOC. This is a type of loan that you receive. Okay, so
yeah, well, not me personally.
I understand.
Got a HELOC, and she doesn't want to show me the contract because I'm a little upset about it, and because she squandered a lot of the money. So I was wondering. I believe she put the apartment as collateral if she doesn't make payments. So I was wondering what offensive measures can I take? Because right now we are able to pay it, but if something goes down where we all get laid off and we're not able to pay it.
Right. Other things that I do is I tell people is to, even if you're in current good standing with your mortgage, that is the best time to go to court. Because many times these judges will see people coming in foreclosure, and then he's just looking, they just are like, you're just trying to get out of paying your mortgage. But when you go in there and you current and you do your research into your documents, whether you're going to do some type of securitization research, whether you're going to search the county recorder and see whether the documents in there are proper, then you can go to the court and file a complaint and be like, Judge, I have some concern, and I have to know that I'm paying the correct party. Because many of us is paying the wrong party, and many of us has gotten noticed that, I'll give you an example. Usually when you do a loan, the lender will say it's Bank of America. Soon thereafter, they'll send you a letter, and they'll say, Bank of America is now your servicer. Well, most people don't understand the transition that they just made from lender to servicer. That means they securitized the loan or sold it, and they're acting in the servicer capacity, but you missed that one letter. So you're thinking, well, okay, well, that's Bank of America since that's who I did the loan with, so that letter, servicer and lender, is synonymous. Well, it's not. It shows a transition in how they've transferred or sold the obligation to someone else. So you're dealing with servicers. So my question to you is, you do your research and say, well, listen, you're a servicer, but I don't know who you're working for. If you own a lawn care company and you send a guy out to cut the grass, the guy that's coming out to cut the grass is not necessarily the owner. So you might give him a check for the company, but the guy that comes out to cut the grass, he can't cash the check because he's not the owner. My thing is that he's a servicer, so he has very limited authority. So what you want to ask is that, who is my current note owner, not holder? You can hold something from me. I can give you, says, a bunch of money to hold. He can't spend it, but he can hold it. And that's what you said, well, I got for the Sharif's money. That don't mean you can spend it. That means you're holding it. So you want to ask who my current owner is. If it's a HELOC and it's in second place, you know, they're in second place. They can't do anything until first place gives them permission to do so. So you need to ask simple questions. Who is my note owner? Who is the current creditor? Simple. Not 10 pages, not 8 pages, not all. Just listen. Who is my current? I want to know who that is because I'm anticipating paying off the loan in full. That's all I ask, simply. And they're going to identify, well, okay, well, we sold your loan to Wells Fargo, and Wells Fargo is your current loan owner. Okay, great. I need to make an appointment with Wells Fargo so I can
examine that they I can determine whether they still have that original instrument to be returned to me upon payment in full. Again, judge, I asked these people to identify themselves. I don't know where they are. I've been paying them, and I'm still paying them. But I want to make sure that at the end of those payments, I don't have somebody else popping up saying that, oh, well, you owed me the debt. You should have. And the courts have said, you need to know who – this is your responsibility to know who you're giving your money to. Nobody else's.
Right.
If you pay somebody and you're not supposed to, oh, well, that's shame on you. So if they don't answer those questions with specificity, you take them to court. Judge, until I know who I'm paying, I'm not going to pay them anymore. For all intents and purposes, pay it to the court. I'm going to put these payments in the court. Let you know I'm not trying to get out of paying. I'm trying to determine who I'm paying. So you need to know because more than likely it's been sold or assigned. And if it's been sold or assigned, then as I did in the beginning of the call to explain to you, that now you may have a debt collector as opposed to a creditor. You may have somebody that doesn't have as much financial interest as you do on the property than you do. Of course, if a debt collector pays 5 or 10 cents on the dollar, how can his claim be higher than yours and you've maintained the property, upkeep the property, pay property taxes and everything else? How can his claim be higher than yours?
Right.
You understand what I mean? So that's all you got to do, brother. You got to research and see who owns the HELOC right now. And whether it's been transferred, charged off, whether the company went out of business, or whether they've written it off, you know, you have to do your due diligence. And then once you, again, identify who they are, then you'll be able to execute the things that I spoke about on the show.
Okay. And another question real quick. If she signed it, technically she paid for it already. So is there an offensive measure or defensive measure that we can
take? I don't subscribe to that. I really don't. And I've heard of that. That's, you know, a lot of us Moors, man, we get a lot of this Patriot information and we blend it in with other things. I deal with money. Listen, I want the debt to be out there. I want these debt collectors to send me letters. I want them to erroneously report my credit report. I want them to rely on correspondence. That's the only way I make money. I don't want them to stop. Well, people say, well, I want them to just stop sending me letters. Well, then, I mean, we're not making any money. We want to get them talking. We want to get them writing because every letter is going to be worth money. So get them talking. You sign and you pay for it. Okay. You go into court with that argument, and they're going to look at you like, yeah.
You can't go into court with that argument. They call it a paper money theory. But, Brother Sharif, really you subscribe to the same thing because they cannot prove a debt because they didn't give you any money. The reason – that they aren't
able
to do the things that you say, but there's no debt that was made.
You're right, brother, you said. You're right. You're absolutely right.
I like your approach, though. It is a different paradigm, and it is, I mean, it's predatory, so I like it.
Yeah, I agree with you.
It's a different, but the reason that they can't put anything is they didn't make those to debt. They cannot sign any affidavits. Like you said earlier, they understand the importance of an oath and all these different things. They can't ever verify debt. A verification would mean they would have to swear to something under penalty of perjury, and they can't do that because they didn't make a loan. They're bankrupt. It's on the public record. It's not Patriot Mythology. It's on the public record. They are bankrupt.
That's right.
But because of compelling state interest, there are certain arguments that you just can't bring up in court. You're just not going to be able to bring those arguments up in court. He's right about that.
Brother, you said I do it a little tactfully, you know, what you said. I might say it in a different way. Now, and I'll do it just for the sake of arguing with a fast mouth attorney. Well, you know, you borrowed the money. I mean, like, listen, man, I looked on it, and I've heard you say, look on the world clock and see how much the debt is going up. I'll be like, now, this country's in $18, $19 trillion in debt, right? And you and I agree on that, right? So tell me what possibly could they have loaned me. And I've said that, and they have no reply. Tell me what can they loan me anything. I mean, you loan me what, some credit? Now, you said money, or you said a loan. I know loan sharks loan money, but you're saying a loan. See, you got to catch them in how they use words because they feel comfortable around pro se litigants because they don't think you're going to pick up on it. But I'm a word connoisseur.
I mean, I'm going to sit up there. When you say one word, and I'm telling you, in order for them to collect a debt or prosecute a foreclosure, they're going to use some words that you should put both of your toes in their mouth. Be like, what? Wait, what did you say? Did you say loan or money or mortgage? How are you speaking about those things and you're a debt collector? You can't talk about mortgage, okay? That agreement is named to someone else. Can they assign a debt? Sure you can. You can do an assignment, but if your assignment says $10 in valuable consideration, here's the $10. Now leave me alone. You said you paid $10 in valuable consideration. Well, what's valuable consideration? What did you give them, a pig, a hog, and two birds? I mean, what is it that you got that you have a financial injury? And so this is what I say, and I tell everybody, so what? I didn't make some alleged payments. How does that injure you? Do you understand? Me not making payments to a contract you're not party to, how does that even have anything to do with you? But did, what financial injury did you suffer because of it? If I didn't pay somebody that's out of business, a bank that went bankrupt, out of business, so what? I didn't pay them. They're bankrupt. How does that injure you? What does that? Who gives you the authority to go in the garbage can to pick up some documentation that had my name on it, or look in the county recorder and pull up some documents that purport you think is worth some money in real property, and you come try to sue me on it? Because that's all you're doing.
Right. Hey, y'all. Look, we at the end of the show. Hey, we ran out of time. I want to thank all the listeners. We had listeners. We had a record crowd today. We had people in Florida, North Carolina, South Carolina, D.C., Virginia, New York, California, Missouri, Kentucky, Michigan, Delaware, Georgia, Tennessee, Arizona. I might have missed a couple of places. I think I had Texas, Ohio, Illinois. This thing is spreading all over the place. So I want to thank everybody around the country for listening in on us. We're going to keep bringing you this fire. I want to thank Brother Sharif Bey for coming on today. Brother, I mean, you did the thing. I ain't going to lie.
You got to come back on.
I want to invite him back tomorrow because I see there's a lot of people want to talk to you. When I see that I didn't even get to close to everybody, but I let you talk because I know you're answering a lot of questions. You're giving out a lot of important information. So I'm not really breaking your stride, but it was a whole bunch of people on the line today, brother. And I don't know.
Brother Yusuf, I say this to you, brother. I want to thank you because the only reason why I'm on this show is because of your spirit. It's because of your spirit and intent to help the people. Y'all never heard of me. You probably will never hear of me again. I don't run around circuits. I don't have time. I'm making money, learning law, find new ways to make money. So the only reason why I'm here is because your will and intent and your spirit in high frequency radio. I've listened to you too many times, and I said I want to give this brother's community as well as himself a way to make money and turn the system around. So I thank God that I'm able to provide some resource, that information to you. I'll be glad to come back again tomorrow or twice a day because I have
to
do stuff.
We're about to run out of time, brother. I want you to come back tomorrow, okay? I want you to come back tomorrow.